Do you suffer from arthritis or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharmtech, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharmtech, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharmtech.org.
Expressed on this program by its guests do not necessarily reflect the views or beliefs of the host or radio network. And this program's sole intent is to help educate, foster critical debate, and help raise and discuss political and social issues which already exist in the public domain. Thank you and enjoy the program.
Some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's edition of the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen, and we are streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and at 21stCenturyWire.com. Thank you for joining us, episode 108, and this is a lovely autumn day, the 8th of November, 2015. Thank you for joining us for yet another weekly edition of the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen, again, and I want to thank all of our listeners, everybody who tuned in to that Snap broadcast on Thursday evening, late Thursday evening, U.S. time. That'll be early morning, U.K., European time. We did a emergency breakdown of the Russian Sinai airline crash, Metro Airways crash, which happened last week, but we did a breakdown and analysis of that. It was a contextual analysis as well as a media critique of the coverage. And, it was very successful. It was the first time we've done a midweek wire. And I think we'll probably continue doing that, for a while, because there seems to be a demand for it. And I do appreciate, many of our listeners and people who were asking us, when are you going to do it? And, you know, some of our followers on Twitter, like Fourth Estate, Anonymous Fourth Estate and people like that, that encouragement means a lot to us. And so we know there's a demand for the content. So, you know, we'll try our best to get it out there, you know, and this is not a really commercial operation. You know, we don't get really paid, to do this sort of stuff. But so we really, really, really count on your listenership and, you know, referrals within your social networks and spreading the word by word of mouth with your friends on Twitter, on Facebook. And I see some people doing that and I really, really appreciate that. So people doing that consistently and it's helped a lot. You know, we're trying to get some, small, you know, dependable sponsors on board that like what we do and we like what they do, but it's hard. It's hard to find a good fit. So in the meantime, you know, we just really need, your listenership. That's the most important thing so that we know there's a demand for the information that we're putting out. And that motivates us, motivates me to know that people really appreciate the information and there's a demand for it. So that is the fuel that keeps us going here. Make no mistake about it. That is number one. And so my hat's off to all of you who tuned in. I think we have about 2,000 some odd people tuned into that show. And it was very successful. I think the next ones will be equally, if not more successful. But what we'll do on the Midweek Wire, just so listeners know, we're really on the Midweek Report, special reports, we're focusing on a single issue. So it was the Russian plane crash this week. It could be the same or something different next week, but it will really be one single show with a single issue, a single breakdown. And that could be anywhere between 1 and 2 hours. And, it's a very focused and really also getting into the media critique. And I think it's really a good time, you know, on a Wednesday or a Thursday, to really rip apart the week's media coverage midweek, to sort of to take a little wind out of their sails, but also so that you don't switch off during the week. I know a lot of people that I talk to, and it's such a propaganda onslaught. I mean, if you listen to that show that we did on Thursday, and I just gave you a taste, trust me, a taste. I watched major network coverage on this Russian air disaster. I probably watched at least cumulatively about sort of 5 days worth of coverage from say 3 different major networks. Okay. That's a lot of television. And I squeeze that in between writing and while I write as well. Why do I do that? And people say, why do you watch the mainstream media? Look, you can sit back in the alternative media and act like you're in some sort of ivory tower, like some people do, and say, we are the media, you know, we're the new media and all this sort of stuff. That's well and good, okay? And to some extent, that's true. But what drives public opinion and what drives policy is still the mainstream media, because that has the most effect on the most amount of eyeballs, and that is what forms consensus reality, which we've talked about on this show many times. So consensus reality is what the consensus believe the reality is. And still, in the alternative media does not define that to a large degree. It does on some issues. It has a huge influence. But we still haven't transitioned to an internet-only information marketplace, okay? The television, nationally syndicated radio, broadcast TV, cable, satellite, interactive television from major networks and major publishers of best-selling books. This is what drives consensus reality. So if you ignore it and you sort of block yourself out from it, you won't know what Joe Average on the street is thinking, or Jane Average. You have to know what they're thinking, what they believe. So when you go talk to people, you got to understand where they're coming from. You got to understand their perspective. If they watch the BBC 5 days a week, it helps to know that, because then you'll know, if you know what the BBC's talking points are on any series of major issues, or Fox's talking points, or CNN's talking points, then you'll know how they've been programmed. So when you're having really important conversations with your peer group, which are your, you know, people you work with, people you go to school with, family members, friends, passing acquaintances, people you meet on the bus, on the tube, on the airplane, while you're waiting for a train, okay, it's important to know, you know, how they become informed on a number of issues. Very, very important. So if you know that they watch Fox and you keep an eye on our analysis, or you tune into Fox now and again to hear their gobbledygook, whatever passes for news on that network, then you'll know at least that this person's being brainwashed by Bill O'Reilly on a nightly basis, or Glenn Beck, or on CNN with their massive crack team of disinformation agents. You know, you'll at least know that, and it helps. Okay, so what we can do is break that down on some important issues midweek. That might be our mission statement for special midweek reports that we'll be generating. So just to let you know, that's what we're doing. We're hoping to get that off the ground. So to the news. By the way, we're going to have a special guest at the top of the hour, in the second hour. His name is Field McConnell. He's been on this show a number of times, and we're going to break down the what's going on up in the friendly skies or not so friendly skies, specifically some new issues that have just emerged regarding the Russian air disaster, Metro Airlines crash in the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt, which took place on I believe October 30th or October 31st last week. So Field is going to come on live, and we're going to have a number of important points that we're going to be delving into with regards to that, not just about the remote hijacking of that particular model of aircraft, the Airbus 321, A321, but a number of other similar issues surrounding airport security internationally. Field is going to share with us some of what he knows about how security is handled in different countries as well, and also kind of a risk assessment of sorts. We're also going to look at something else that's just popped up with regards to Israel that a lot of people aren't aware of with this disaster. So we're going to unveil that at the top of the hour with our guest, Field McConnell. So that should be interesting, to say the least. So U.S. politics, that's all the rage. So we'll just look at the 2016 election circus, give you an update of what the circus animals are up to, what tricks they're doing, and what the ringmasters are doing. So right now, there's another debate scheduled. I think it's a Republican debate, and I think it's for Tuesday. I forgot what network it's on, probably CBS or something like that, so or ABC. So anyway, after last debate, President's cracking jokes that the Republican candidates can't handle the CNBC moderators, how are they going to handle Russia and China, ha ha ha. It seems that all our president is really good at is telling jokes. He has a career waiting for him as a comedian. I think that's what he always wanted to be. Not president. He seems to enjoy cracking jokes more than he does anything. Well, that and dropping bombs. So these are the two things that our president loves the most. So Marco Rubio is being elevated as the one, quote, everyone's talking about. You're the one everyone's talking about. So we have all these various Fox and Glenn Beck are pushing Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio, the youngest presidential candidate ever, I think. I don't know how old he is. I really don't know how old he is. I know Ted Cruz is 44, and that's pretty young. But Rubio seems to be younger. If he's older than Ted Cruz, that would just be weird. It'd be like the curious case of Benjamin Button. I think that was the name of the movie. Brad Pitt, where the guy just gets younger as he gets older. Strange. But, you know, Marco Rubio, my gosh. So I see what they're doing. The Republicans are trying to craft their own little version of Obama. So they have this little Rubiotron, which they can wind up and whatever. He's 38, 40, 42. I don't know how old he is. But he's got no experience of doing anything. He hasn't even done a term in Senate. In fact, no one's even seen him in the U.S. Senate. He's been out gallivanting around the country, promoting himself, running for president, thinks he's qualified to lead the United States. This kid, incredible. But this kid has billionaire backers, you see. So that's how it goes. So here's audio clip one. This is just a Glenn Beck. This is weird. It's like a cross between a debutante ball and I don't know, and sort of fraternity rush week. The way that these right wing pundits introduce and just gush over these Republican candidates. I mean, Glenn Beck and all the rest were gushing over Scott Walker just 2 months ago. It was embarrassing. You know, it was like, I don't know. It was like, I don't want to say anything too vulgar on the air, but let's just say it was a very camp version of speed dating. Let's leave it at that. Okay. Let's leave it at that. So that's, here's audio clip one.
You're going to be able to do in government, deal with these things. You can strengthen family on the edges, but ultimately, without strong family, you cannot have a strong country.
You are a, you're a guy who's perfectly positioned, to take the lead. I mean, if you look at the history, of where everybody should be at this point, you and Ted Cruz really are in the perfect position, at this point. People are really starting to talk about that you are the guy to really watch. I want to ask you a tough question here.
Uh-huh.
I'm a Muse fan. I was on Muse before a lot of people. You know the band Muse?
I don't know a lot about them.
Okay. You don't have to understand this analogy, but they're a very popular band in Europe. They're really cool. They're, at the time, they were very underground. They're very anti-establishment. You know, yada yada. Huge fan. Well, I used to talk about Muse all the time, and I would play their music all the time until I became, quote, Glenn Beck on Fox. Muse loved it when I loved them before, but soon as I became Glenn Beck, Muse immediately tried to distance themselves from me because their audience was like, oh, if he likes them, they must suck. Here's where it ties into you. We're really afraid that you're going to start getting the Mitt Romneys, the Jeb Bushes when he's out, all of the establishment liking you, and that will say to people like us, good God, run like like there is no tomorrow for Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Can you tell
us? That's an interesting question.
Yeah. That's a long way to the well.
Yeah, no, but look, but it's an important question, right? So, yeah, I want the Republican Party to be unified. And I want to bring new people in, but not by changing our principles, but by convincing them that our principles are the right way forward. So ultimately, absolutely, I want to see our Republican Party unite behind whoever the nominee is. That's not the issue today, though. The issue today is the fact of the matter is that I'm running despite the fact that the majority of the people in, who want to call it the establishment, told me that I shouldn't run, that it wasn't my turn, or that, and if you look at it today, look at the state of Florida, where the enormous majority of establishment elected officials are not supporting my candidacy. And one of the reasons why is this: I honestly believe the Republican Party, if it does not change, if it doesn't turn the page and embrace new leadership with new ideas that are closer to the people that...
Okay, I don't think I could take much more of that. I'm sorry for putting our listeners through that, but that was the voice of Marco Rubio, the man-child from Florida who's running for president. I mean, you, after listening to that exchange, you know, they say that the Democrats are like the LGBT party. I'm going to have to differ after listening to that exchange. I mean, that is, there's something so camp about the Republican Party now that I think that should be the new LGBT party, because at least on the men's side, okay, I've never seen anything so camp in my life. These interviews that go on, it's crazy. And Glenn Beck, my goodness. Well, the Christmas sweaters haven't come out yet. Actually, he's got a Christmas book out. Speaking of camp, Glenn Beck's got a new Christmas book out. It's called The Legend of St. Nicholas by Glenn Beck. You know, it's another ghost writing phenomenon, Glenn Beck. So basically, I mean, God, Muse, the band Muse, they must have, if they heard that segment, if they're listening now, they must be horrified that you're getting plugged. You know, you're being aligned with Glenn Beck. That's not cool. That's very uncool. So I feel bad for Muse. Glenn Beck has just murdered them on the air on U.S. national radio. It's really embarrassing. Gosh, but it happens to bands when certain people, shimmy up to certain bands. I won't mention any bands' names, but I know one metal band that got absolutely hammered after a certain radio talk show host started hanging out with them. That was embarrassing. But anyway, I think they're trying to put that behind them. Poor guys. We'll talk about that with Hesher maybe later in the last segment of the last third hour. But what happens when bombastic talk show hosts shimmy up next to metal bands? So anyway, so as camp as it is, as bad as it is, then Jeb, here's the thing with the Republicans. Okay, the debates are coming, and there was about, I don't know how many candidates were there before, like 15 or 20, and so now they've finally listening to our complaints, they've trimmed down the field a little bit. They've cut a few people. So a couple of people didn't make the cut this time. These are people polling less than 0.5%, and rightfully so. They should be sent home. So I think one of them was, I believe it was Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor and televangelist, Mike Huckabee, and Chris Christie, the barroom brawler from New Jersey, Mr. National Security, Chris Christie. So these people were polling so low, they finally said, right, guys, that's it. We can't have you on TV. So they still have the losers debate, which happens before, I believe. So the losers debate for the kiddie table, the undercard, they like to call it. So they, I believe, I'm not sure if Lindsey Graham is still there. No, hold on. No, wait, George Pataki. God, I don't even know he was running. And then Lindsey Graham will exclude them. The big news is that low polling numbers for Pataki and Graham will exclude them from either debate. Oh, my. Okay, hold on. So Fox decided that polling numbers for Chris Christie aren't strong enough. So they will be. Okay, so here. Sorry, I got that wrong. The losers debate. So Lindsey Graham is going to be home playing with his plastic toy soldier collection. He will not be allowed in the loser's bracket. That's how well he's doing. And this, Lindsey Graham takes every opportunity to be on any major network, be it CNN or Fox. He's there all the time. And he still can't get 0.1% or something nationally. How pathetic. A sitting U.S. senator who thinks that he's going to be commander in chief. Well, not anymore, Lindsey. But all he was doing was promoting himself. So the losers debate now will be Chris Christie, Mike Huckabee, Kingfish, Bobby Kingfish, Jindal, and Rick Santorum. All polling it very strongly, all of them polling around 1%. Okay? Pathetic. So in the upper 8 bracket, you'll have Donald Trump, Ben Carson, both polling in the high 20s, and then you have the mediocre crowd, which the mainstream media and the establishment are trying like hell to promote to get them, at least above the 10% mark. And the mediocre bracket is Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Carly Fettuccini, and Fiorina, and Rand Paul, and John Kasich. Okay, so that's the mediocre bracket below the leaders, who are overwhelmingly Donald Trump and Ben Carson. So the media have decided to ignore Trump now. They try not to talk about him. So he's got to go out and do Saturday Night Live skits to get some airtime now, because they've just blacked him out. Basically, this is the strategy going forward to eliminate Donald Trump. Just don't talk about him because he's doing too well. Ben Carson, the strategy is just listen to when Ben talks, because he's bound to say something stupid about every 5 minutes. And then they pounce on him, basically. This is a guy that never wanted to run for president, but a super PAC got together and said, Ben, you got to run for president. We need some color on the GOP ticket. So Ben Carson said, okay, I'll run, So he's done well to promote himself. So Ben Carson's done extremely well. He can sell best-selling books now. His speaking engagement fees are tripled, maybe quadrupled now. Probably get $250,000 for an hour or more. So he's just, he's going to get so rich now, after he drops out of the race. He probably will drop out at some point, or run the primaries, and he'll, I don't think he's going to win. So Donald Trump overwhelmingly has defied all the critics. He's still kicking ass in the polls. I'm not endorsing Donald Trump here. I'm just saying that he's kicking ass. Okay. And rest of them, well, listen to this Jeb Bush ad. This is audio clip two. This is how sad things have gotten. Go ahead and roll that.
We do not have to be the world's policeman. We have to be the world's leader. Who's going to take care of the Christians that are being eliminated in the Middle East? Who's going to take care of Israel and support them, our greatest ally in the Middle East? The United States has the capability of doing this, and it's in our economic and national security interests that we do it. I will be that kind of president, and I hope you want that kind of president for our country going forward.
Right to Rise USA is responsible for the content of this message.
Okay, so there's this, that's Jeb Bush. And now, that was only a 30 second ad, and it was just all doublespeak. So he comes out of the gates. Go ahead and roll that again. Listen, he comes out. Wait, don't roll it yet, but let me just tell you what you're gonna see, people. He'll say, we don't need to be the world's policeman. And then he goes on to say, these are the things that we need to do to be the world's policeman. We need to save Israel and save the Christians that are being eliminated by our CIA in Iraq and Syria. So roll that real quickly again. Just listen to it. It's doublespeak. Pure doublespeak.
We do not have to be the world's policeman. We have to be the world's leader. Who's going to take care of the Christians that are being eliminated in the Middle East? Who's going to take care of Israel and support them, our greatest ally in the Middle East? The United States has the capability of doing this, and it's in our economic and national security interests that we do it. I will be that kind of president, and I hope you want that kind of president for our country going forward.
Right to Rise USA is responsible for the content of this message.
Okay, so the Bushes are up to their old tricks again, okay? Trust me. If you remember, if anyone's old enough to remember, George W. Bush, that's the last Bush president, the younger one, he campaigned on a talking point of no nation building. This is what he said. This got him elected. So what he did is he tried to, his dad at that time wasn't particularly as revered as he is now. With Republican icons, they're normally revered much later. So with Reagan, it took 20 years to reach sainthood. Now George W. Bush is they're thinking about canonizing him, the GOP party. So they're putting him through the sainthood process that they have. So George W. Bush is going through sainthood. So they're auditioning him right now to see if he's going to, you know, make it there and be enshrined in stained glass somewhere at the RNC headquarters and have a big picture of him when you walk in the door, like L. Ron Hubbard. So George W. Bush, the younger one, he campaigned on no nation building. Intentionally, he deceived America in order to make it seem like he wasn't going to be like his dad and start stupid wars in the Middle East. Okay. For oil and power and all the rest. So he ran. And of course, Americans are stupid enough. They took the bait for it. They thought, hell, I'll vote for him. He's somebody I can have a beer with. Okay. That's what happened. So anyway, the election came and George Bush didn't have enough votes, but so they sort of fixed it, ran it through the, Florida, scammed America. His brother was governor at the time, totally fixed that election in Florida. And of course, that allowed him to take the national election after they stole it in Florida. That's history. So he became president without actually winning, which is interesting. And no one seems to care. So he deceived the American people. And what did he do when he became president? Of course, well, that's well known. Everyone knows. So it's just, you know, turn the world on its head, basically. And rivers of blood started flowing, and they're still flowing today. So that's what Bushes do. So Jeb Bush is a chip off the old block, as you can see from that ad. He'll lie right to your face. He'll use Orwellian doublespeak. Doesn't care. He's just there because the family have said, you have to run and be in power, and then we're going to assemble a cabinet around you that might even include Dick Cheney. After his eighth heart transplant, they'll have a chair for him. In fact, even if Cheney passes away, he'll still be in the cabinet. They probably cryogenically downloaded his brain or whatever, and they'll have him there like Dr. Theopolis on Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Just there, like Twicky will walk in the walk in the white, he'll walk in the Oval Office, biddy biddy biddy. Hey, Jeb, biddy biddy biddy. And then Dr. Theopolis will be like, Dick Cheney in a computer around Twiki's neck. He'll be like, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, biddy biddy. Hey, Jeb. So that's probably what the Jeb Bush presence will be like. So Cheney will still be somehow involved. They'll probably resurrect Rumsfeld. So what do the Bushes do? They're very clever, the Bushes. Very clever. Don't underestimate their dedication to seize power once again. So Daddy Bush is releasing a book this week. And, the pre-release happened and, oh, big controversy. He made a few comments about Donald Rumsfeld. And so Rumsfeld hit back at the old man saying he is senile or something like that. So this is all play acting. This is the Bush family all working their roles, working their corners. So Daddy Bush has said this. He's disparaged the cabinet that he himself assembled for his son in 2000. The most disgraceful cabinet in the history of the United States of America, I would say, in my opinion. This was assembled by George Bush Sr. Okay, George Herbert Walker Bush. And now he's distancing himself from those people that he himself probably handpicked to be around his son, little George. And why is that? Why is he doing that? They're trying to decouple Jeb from his brother George. Because they know that as long as he's attached to George Bush, that weight is sinking to the bottom of the harbor. Okay? In Tallahassee. That's where it's going. Down there with Luca Brasi. So there's no chance whatsoever. So that's what they're doing. Very clever. And believe me, if you look at the news coverage, that you'd think Jeb Bush is like the leading candidate, and he's only polling at 7 or 8%. You think, and that's only because he's throwing so much money at it. You think he was the leading candidate. By the amount of airtime, guess who is giving, who's promoting Jeb Bush? CNN is backing Jeb Bush. Every 2 seconds you see, Jeb Bush's campaign plant. Her name is Anna Navarro. She is a, sort of 40-something, American Latino woman who's a very close, quote, close friend of Jeb Bush and a Bush supporter. And she is their, main Republican, expert, pundit they've got every 5 minutes on CNN. And what's she doing? Promoting Jeb Bush. So the CNN has chosen to back Jeb Bush. That's important. You should know that. Because if you've got CNN behind you, you can go the long haul. Okay? So basically their job is to file down Donald Trump's lead any way possible. They're having trouble doing it. I'll tell you why. And a lot of people haven't said this because they've missed it. The reason they're having trouble filing down Trump and promoting all these mediocre losers, the reason why they have an undercard debate, they're still having an undercard debate, is because there's two front runners who are non-establishment. So the Republican Party's, strategy to run Carson to make their party seem more appealing and more diverse has backfired on the RNC and all the super PACs. Because guess what? The two non-establishment frontrunners, that means the media has to divide their time attacking both Trump and Carson, or trying to avoid them or attack them, whichever the case may be. Normally there's only one. If it's just Ross Perot or one non-establishment candidate, the media can handle that. Okay, they can do all sorts of things to mitigate them, damage them, promote all the losers. Okay, they're having trouble doing this because there's two of them. This is a problem. So Ben Carson is brilliant in this, and so is Trump. That both of them are way, way out in front. I mean, two people with zero political experience, way, way out in front, and all these career politicians and government welfare experts. Because if you're a career politician, your life is government welfare. like you've never ever had an honest job in your life, and having a show on Fox doesn't count. I'm sorry. Okay. And neither does the public speaking engagement junket tour. Okay. If you're a politician, that does not count as work. Okay. I don't know what to classify that as. So that's what's going on. So it's interesting, and it will continue to be interesting. We'll see this next debate, a little bit of drama, but probably more the same as before. So they'll declare a winner. And by the way, I think they ran Carly Fiorina in order to provide contrast for Hillary. That wouldn't surprise me, because I mean she's not appealing at all. So you put her next to Hillary in theoretical terms, and it makes Hillary look fantastic. Okay, so Carly Fiorina, my goodness, embarrassment. So anyway, so back over to the Democratic side, they have this. They've now, well, MSNBC, I mean, which is one of the most partisan networks in the world. Okay, the only network that's more partisan than MSNBC is the Chinese state broadcaster. I've never seen anybody as partisan as MSNBC. So they ditched the debate format. Now they're going for, they're calling it the forum format. Okay. So basically this is designed to promote Hillary Clinton. This is who MSNBC is backing. So the partisan broadcast television is ruining politics in the United States, and it's damaging the Democratic process as well. Okay. Make no mistake about it. So MSNBC and Fox are the worst offenders. CNN is more of a sort of Pentagon oriented network. So they're still involved in trying to fix public opinion the way they want, but it's usually towards more of a military an outlook. So Jeb Bush is definitely the military candidate on the Republican side, and Hillary Clinton will be the military candidate on the Democratic side. So those are the people CNN will back, because the CNN is the military industrial complex. Okay. Fox is just the Republican, industrial complex and military as well. So they want to hawk, you know, either way. So they'd actually be happy with Hillary. So Rachel Maddow is a host, on MSNBC. Nobody watches this network, but once in a while they get in the news now, especially around election time. In fact, these sort of election circuses keep some of these networks in business, actually. Funny enough. So, I think we've got video clip, two. So this is, it's now no more debates on MSNBC. They have a forum format. So it's Rachel Maddow with one-on-one time. Like, I've got my chair and you've got your chair, and we'll have a nice fun chat. And let's let the American people get to know you. Oh, wonderful. So this is the death of democracy here. So this is basically a softball match. Go ahead and roll video clip two.
Questions in here are not policy questions. They are also not designed to make you look or feel dumb. So don't hate me for making you do this. Everybody else did it too. You have to pick one.
Oh, okay. Here you go. This one. This is like the Academy Award goes to.
Yeah, except opposite. Because it's no reward. All right. Okay. If you had time to learn a new language, which language would you pick?
Spanish.
Why?
Because we have a lot of Spanish-speaking people in our country. I want to know how to communicate better with them.
Very good. Introvert or extrovert?
I am an extro-introvert. And here's what I mean about that. I mean, you know, I love being with people. I love all of the excitement, and I like meeting people and hearing their stories. But I also like time alone, and I like to think and relax and sleep and stuff like that. So I guess I'm a little bit.
Okay. All right. This is a hard one, and you're not allowed to squirm out of it. I'll let you know in advance. If you had
to delegate it to someone else?
Nope. There are no lifelines on this stage.
Dear.
If you had to pick somebody, you had to.
Yes.
From the Republican presidential field this year to be your vice president. There was a national crisis. And there had to be a...
Enough already. Enough Hillary. Enough Rachel. So that was just, I mean, if we should have... I should have one of those bags. Do they have those bags anymore in airplanes? You used to have a sick bag. When you get on the plane, there's a little pouch. It's got like a flight, couple flight magazines, and there was a little, a barf bag, and it was tucked in there. I used to collect them as a kid. You know, I'd take anything off the airplane as a kid. They used to give you little airplanes, little souvenirs before. They stopped doing that recently. Can't imagine why. So anyway, God, yeah, I wish I had one of those bags right now. That was really horrible to listen to. So that's what passes for democracy right now in America. It's great, isn't it? Isn't it great? So that's it. So that's it. One candidate. That's it. So the whole thing was geared for her. Very well rehearsed. They ran through their paces before the show. Incredible. So. It's great entertainment, but is it that useful in terms of, you know, getting people, where they need to go with real issues and, real fundamental problems, that face the country that need to be solved? No. It doesn't get anybody any closer to any of that. What it does is it gets that candidate, closer to the finish line. Because it's all about power, you see. On the right, it's the same as on the left. It's about seizing power, and a gang will come into power, and it's all good. So you have the right gang, and you have the left gang. And behind them are the same exact corporations and investment banks and fiat merchants. Same crew. In fact, they'll be backing both sides. So I think you're going to see wars like you wouldn't imagine with either. It looks like they're pushing for Bush Clinton. And I've said that for a while. I did say that Marco Rubio might be, if the Republicans might put him forward. I said this about in the spring, I think. Because if they wanted, mathematically, if they wanted to have a chance at winning, he could get them that 10% they need, for the Latino vote. But the only person who could really challenge Hillary Clinton in a national election, and stand toe to toe and dish it out is Donald Trump. Okay. There's no one else on the right who can do it. Who's got the combination of popularity and balls. It's just Trump. That's it. So Rubio would be guaranteeing another, well, he'd be like, he'll be like, I don't know, another loser. So that's what passed. That's MSNBC. I was listening to Fox and it's kind of a joke. So I think this show is called The Five, and the five ridiculous people sitting around a table. And they get paid huge sums of money. To do this, they analyze nothing. They provide nothing to the listeners. This is the Fox reality show. And they send some very disturbing messages. So I heard them say something, Greg Gutfeld made a derogatory comment about Star Wars recently. He said, it's called Star Wars for a reason, because there's wars even in space. And it's not called Star Peace. And said, we need to send children the right message that it's all about war. This is on Fox. Go ahead and roll audio clip 7.
Got it. I mean, somebody help me. Bring me back to Darth Vader.
But you know what's interesting about Star Wars? It gives you a glimpse into human nature. It's called Star Wars. It's not called Star Peace. There's no room for pacifists in outer space. Pacifists cause war because of their inaction. We love Star Wars, not Star Peace.
It's true.
Thank you.
It's true. And let me just tell you something. You see.
See, this is the level that it's descended to in the United States. These are dangerous individuals in a sense that they're given a pulpit to spread some of the most vile ideas. Disgusting. I don't know what to say. It does make me sad on a level, and it's probably going to make some of you angry to listen to that. But just the arrogance, the ignorance, and they just sit around cracking jokes and bragging about how much money they make. It's disgusting. Very disgusting. So, speaking of vile organizations, Charlie Hebdo is in the news. Charlie Hebdo. So the great satirists at Charlie Hebdo. I loved it when the whole Charlie Hebdo thing broke out last January, and he had all these American newscasters saying, and the Islamic terror attack at Charlie Hebdo magazine over in France. So they try to sound a bit European or a bit sophisticated by saying, instead of Charlie Hebdo, just call it Charlie Hebdo. If you're American, it's Charlie Hebdo. It's not Charlie Hebdo. Charlie Hebdo. It's a joke. So anyway, they're back in the news. Guess what? It wasn't enough for them to instigate a religious war between Christians and Muslims and Jews and Muslims that Charlie Hebdo managed to somehow pull off last January and try to pass it off as free speech, this incitement that they seem to be quite good at. So what did they do this week? Their latest issue, basically poking fun at the 227 dead Russian victims of the crash in the Sinai. I'm not kidding. People are going to say, no way, Patrick. They would never do that, would they? Yeah, they just did. So the great artists at Charlie Hebdo, which they call journalists, I don't know how you could use that term with this magazine, but the Rothschild-run publication in France, there is basically, a couple of cartoons. It's here on 21st Century Wire. Free speech fraudsters. Free speech fraudsters is the name of the article. And Charlie Hebdo's latest cartoon makes fun of dead Russian airline victims. No kidding. So hold on. I got a problem with the audio. Sorry about that, folks. So anyway, so there we go. It's another level of depravity by our friends at Charlie Hebdo. And what do? They try to defend it. Believe it or not, the editor has come out very strange and basically said that he's blaming Russia for being too sensitive about their cartoons. And he's saying that the outrage from Russia over this Charlie Hebdo magazine is to detract attention from other problems that Russia's having. Wow. Wow. Talk about arrogant. So these are guys that would talk about sellouts, okay? It is kind of a shame. I mean, think of all the great French artists. And, from, Matisse to Chagall to the philosophers, Rousseau, Voltaire, Descartes, Sartre, the list is endless, Schweitzer. I could go on and on. And then today in 21st century, France's greatest cultural product is a Charlie Hebdo. And they've got nothing better to do than to poke fun at one of the worst airline disasters, and the cartoon has a plane wreckage and people falling on top of a bearded Muslim man in the desert, and one of the cartoons made a joke about, oh, you should have taken the cheaper airline. Just disgusting. This is a vile organization, and it makes me think that, and this brings me back to an article which was posted back in 2012 by Thierry Masson at VoltaireNet.org, and Thierry's French, fantastic investigative, just activist and blogger, really. But Back in 2012, Thierry warned everybody. He said NATO is preparing for a vast disinformation campaign. Member states of NATO and the GCC, this is the Gulf Cooperation Council, that's basically Saudi Arabia and Qatar and UAE and Kuwait and the rest of them, they're all preparing for a coup d'etat and sectarian genocide in Syria. This is back in June 11, 2012. Okay. So if you want to prevent these crimes, you should act now. Circulate this article on the internet. Alert your elected officials, said Thierry. And this is, he said this will cover, TV stations, TV programs, programs created by government intelligence agencies, etc., and NATO, departments of NATO, nudging units. And he was right. Was Thierry correct when he said this back in 2012? I think he was. I think he was right on the money. So he said they're PSYOPs officers, Operation Mockingbird type individuals who are embedded in editorial positions in all these major networks, Al Jazeera, BBC, CNN, Fox. This is all true, by the way, and newspapers. So this is the disinformation campaign. So Charlie Hebdo, if you think about what they did last January and you looked at that event like an Operation Gladio type event, then you'll know that that was basically a false flag. It was some kind of an operation like that. And the way that the media seized upon it and spun it and the way they did created all these fake backstories and so forth. So, and then to Charlie Hebdo to wrap the free speech, issue around their sorry excuse for a magazine. That was a failing magazine. I talked to French people. They couldn't even give it away before that. You think, what's the population of France? 60 million? Right around there. I'm probably off a little bit, but it's around 60 million, 50 million, something like that. That's the population of France. What do you think before the January Gladio event, what do you think Charlie Hebdo's subscription base was? This famous satirical French magazine. It was less than 30,000. Some will say the actual subscribers would be around 20,000. And the rest were just, in dentist's offices and, pubs and coffee shops. You know, around 20,000 before January last year. That's in a country of 50 plus million. Is that pretty successful, you think, for a famous landmark satirical magazine? No, not really. Not really. And what did they get after the whole drama and the whole Gladio event? It was a spectacular event and the world was Je suis Charlie all the way. Everybody was rallying around Charlie Hebdo for their incitement and their gallant free speech effort. Okay. And what happens? They get a bailout from the French government. A bailout, $1.2 million, which actually came indirectly from guess who? Google. But I don't think Google allocated the money. Google gave the money to the French government, is part of a, I believe part of a, what appears to be a slightly bogus settlement. I mean, I wouldn't side with Google on many things, but I might actually side with Google on the Google News, class action European lawsuit. Was a little bit strange, to say the least. Okay, so they managed to crowbar some money off Google. A lot of governments did. Fair enough. Call it patronage. And they took 1.2 million of this and just handed it over to Charlie Hebdo. And said, there you go, guys. This should keep you going for another 12 months. You know, so you can produce the filth that they put out this week, which was disgusting. Nothing to do with free speech or democracy. Nothing. These guys would sell out for a couple of bottles of Beaujolais Nouveau at 50 cents each. The alcoholic cartoonists, they're not satirists. There's nothing satirical about this. Is just a lousy, just outdated magazine run by a bunch of middle-aged Lothario alcoholics. Okay. Chain smoking, wine swigging, who are just basically working a NATO agenda, which is to create international outrage, to create division and polarization and antagonize. And that's exactly what they've been doing for the last 12 months. To great effect. So brilliant. Not je suis Charlie. Je suis NATO. Je suis NATO. The people still, they buy the magazine. They like the satire. The cartoon. They buy the magazine. They like, the people buy. So, beaucoup d'argent, for us. Yeah. Great. Très bien. Très bien. Très bien, Charlie. Very good. Great operation. Great operation there at Charlie Hebdo. You should be proud of yourselves. But they don't care. They're just going to drink themselves to death at the bistro around the corner. That's all that's left for Charlie Hebdo. I got nothing good to say about that organization. Nothing good at all. Nothing good. So what's Obama? So Obama is, it's interesting that even Petro Poroshenko, the wayward puppet who was installed by the West as president of the Ukraine, he even went out of his way to express his condolences over the downed Russian airliner in the Sinai last week. And guess who was too busy cracking jokes to be the only world leader not to express his condolences in what even the U.S. and Britain are calling the worst terrorist attack since 9/11. It's not actually officially a terror attack yet. We'll go over that with our next guest, but Obama didn't have time to send his condolences. What's wrong with this man? Is he upset about Syria? What would cause that sort of behavior? I don't know. We're not going to second guess the president. He can answer for himself. Anyway, we're going to take a short break and connect our next guest, Field McConnell, on the other side. This is the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
good life right across his green fields. And his generation saved it from fire. But we keep no check on our appetite.
Suffer from arthritis or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharmtec, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharmtec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharmtec.org.
Spartans! What is your profession?
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Sunday Wire. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're streaming out live on the Alternate Current Radio Network and at 21stCenturyWire.com. Thank you for rejoining us for this episode number 108. And before the break, we touched on the Russian airline disaster, and we also did an extended analysis of that back on Thursday on the Alternate Current Radio Network. Premiering a new midweek report. So thank you for joining us, those of you who managed to catch that. That's up right now at 21stCenturyWire.com. In the right-hand margin, you'll see a recording of that. We've got it up on our SoundCloud account as well as on ACR. So I thought it really important timing to bring on our next guest. And if you are a regular listener to the show, you'll know this person. You've gotten to know him through our interviews over the last 12 months. His name is Field McConnell. He is a retired commercial airline pilot and a veteran graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis, prestigious military academy in the United States, and also has been a member of our National Air Corps in the United States, serving on a number of different units and flying many different aircrafts. I would say Field is an expert in the field of aviation, and I couldn't think of a better person to have on the show this week to really discuss some of the important details of this case, of the Russian airliner, but also a lot of issues that are surrounding this that a lot of people haven't really touched yet, which we're going to scratch the surface of now. Thank you, Field McConnell, for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Patrick, and thank you for hosting me once again.
And so I'm lucky to get you, Field, because I know you travel a lot. In fact, you clock more air miles than anybody else I know, except maybe, gosh, I don't know if there's anybody that does more air miles than you. Maybe Bruce Springsteen or Elton John. You've been around the world, and you've traveled to a number of different countries and cities, Field, and this issue of air safety is getting a lot of airtime in the United States. There's a lot of speculation going on about what brought this Russian plane down. We're going to look at a couple of possibilities. I think it's important to look and talk about all the different possibilities and not just focus on one, like the U.S. media is very quick to want to hang this tragedy on the back of ISIS, that ISIS planted a bomb, etc. And there's a lot of other, what I think are even more likely scenarios that aren't getting analyzed at all. And I thought you might be able to help us out to look into some of these. One of them, Field, is the technical side. This aircraft, from what I've read, had an incident which happened maybe 3 years ago. I believe the tail hit the runway and caused potentially some damage. They said it was repaired and was put back into service. But tell us, I mean, what type of things can go wrong with an Airbus or a Boeing with the amount of landings they do? And if the tail was to hit the tarmac, would that have serious implications in terms of structural integrity of the aircraft body?
Okay. First of all, I think the maintenance is extremely good in Germany and in Russia and in Israel. And as you know, I flew in Kazakhstan, and it's my experience that the the maintenance performed in Kazakhstan was superior to what I was used to in the United States of America. So as far as the tail strike goes, I think the greatest significance there is that the weakest part of a pressurized jet airplane is just forward of the empennage, and the empennage is a French word, which means the little wing in the back and the vertical tail. And the empennage has played a part in a previous false flag, my choice of words. United 93 had its empennage blown off by Smacksonic, which is a rocket fuel that can be window dressed to look like vibrational sound and thermal insulation. And aircraft mechanics around the world would not, unless they heard this lecture or they happened to stumble across some writing about Smacksonic, and I don't know who other than David Hawkins has been talking about Smacksonic, but in the case of this A321 that went down the Russian metro jet, I believe it cannot be ruled out, especially now that the aircraft is destroyed, but I don't think it could be ruled out that when the tail struck the tarmac, that the rear pressure bulkhead, that's a precise term, pressure bulkhead, that's where the pressurized cabin meets the unpressurized empennage. And so if that was weakened several years back, that would be a very good aircraft to select, because they like to get rid of, I'm talking about when false flags involving aircraft, which now number some 14 since I've reported it to the FAA and the FAA administrator, Michael Huerta, and the Airline Pilots Association. But there's been 14 aircraft that have gone down consistent with my warnings. And at some point, the international community is going to object to the fact that aviation authorities in the U.S. have been continuing to expose global passengers to unnecessary risk. In the case of United 93, when the aircraft was 41 minutes late on the morning of 9/11, it had to be destroyed, and there were two F-15s and one F-16 hawking it, H-A-W-K-I-N-G, but they didn't have to destroy it because the aircraft was destroyed with Smacksonic, and I will spell that for your listeners. S-M-A-C-S-O-N-I-C. And when an electrical pulse detonates the explosive, it goes from ambient temperature, which would typically be 73 to 74 degrees in the cabin of an airliner, it goes from the ambient temperature to 5,800 degrees in less than a second, and it creates an overpressure that the pressure relief valves and the emergency pressure relief valves cannot dissipate. And so it attacks the weakest part of the aircraft, which is the rear pressure bulkhead. And in this case, perhaps those that selected the airplane for detonation knew the history, and so they knew that they would have a plausible excuse for why the airplane came apart. But it's my understanding, and I could be wrong, and I hope you have the answer, maybe from something you've read. My understanding is the aircraft came down in two big pieces, and that the pieces were separated from each other somewhere in the middle of the aircraft. And also, and this is a very important point, so hopefully you've seen it. I didn't make it up or imagine it, but I understand that the jagged metal where the aircraft was separated into two pieces, the metal was bent outwardly to indicate an internal explosion as opposed to the external threat via a missile or any other weapon. So I'll just stop right there and say, have you heard anything, Patrick, regarding the damage to the sheet metal, which is aluminum, where the break in the fuselage occurred? Have you heard that it was bent outward as opposed to inward, indicating it was pre-placed explosive somewhere in the aircraft?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard anything specific about that. You know, I've seen some similar analysis done with MH17, but that was more along the lines of the plane being struck by bullets or some ordnance from outside. But as far as this flight goes, that's the first I've heard of it from you. But my question is this: is explain what exactly is SmackSonic? Something that can be detonated remotely. What's the process there? Or is this it's not your typical explosion. Can this only be done? It works at high altitudes with high pressure. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's done electronically, remotely. And SmackSonic is a brand name. It's a French product. And if anybody were to Google, in fact, I'm in my chat room right now, and I hope somebody will Google this for me to help me give you a better answer, not only for you, but your listeners. But SmackSonic is a brand name of a French product that looks exactly like aircraft insulation. It's got two white layers on the outboard, and the center layer is black, and the center layer that is black is actually the rocket fuel that when the two white layers are subjected to an electronic pulse, it detonates the black insulation. It looks like insulation, but it's not. It's rocket fuel. But in fact, someone just put up a picture of SmackSonic insulation. I'm looking at it. But when the electrical arc is introduced to the pre-existing SmackSonic, which is installed among other places in Toulouse, France, and Abbotsford, British Columbia, there is a aircraft modification center in Abbotsford, British Columbia called Cascade Aero, and I'm not suggesting that they've ever put SmackSonic in an aircraft, but they certainly could. That's the business they're in. And when an electrical arc is directed at the SmackSonic, it detonates the rocket fuel, and the entire interior of the aircraft goes to 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit until it overpressurizes and blows the airplane apart. And the airplane could be blown apart, like in the case of United 93, the empennage was blown off, and then the escaping gas superheated to 5,800 degrees Fahrenheit, propelled what was left of United 3 forward rapidly enough to where it pulled off one of the engines. The 757, in the case of United 93, has two engines slung under the fuselage, and it has been reported consistently since the day of 9/11 that one of the engines was found 8 miles from the point where the empennage burned a hole in the ground, and Governor Tom Ridge of Pennsylvania secured the area and removed all the evidence. And this is something very consistent with all of these aviation hits, is rather than put yellow tape around a crime scene where nothing moves, people get into the crime scene and remove everything that would indicate to a unbiased investigator what happened. So in the case of United 93, that person was Governor Tom Ridge. He gave the orders that protected the crime scene so that the participants, which include my own sister, Christine Marcy, would not be implicated. And for that, in many of these cases, people that do dastardly things get huge promotions. In the case of Governor Ridge, he became the head of the Department of Homeland Security.
The first head of Department of Homeland Security. He was the first ever head, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he grew a conscience because he didn't last long in that job.
No.
But as I travel around the world and I go in and out of airports and I subject myself to the TSA, it makes me wonder what the value of a quitam lawsuit would be, because at some point, and I think the point is rapidly approaching, I think Russia is going to help with 9/11 truth. That's my fervent prayer, and it's also my belief. But there's evidence that Russia has that implicates something very heinous that occurred on the morning of 9/11. And all of the billions of dollars spent for DHS and TSA, these are totally redundant, superfluous expenditures, because it is impossible to hijack an aircraft because of the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot. And so they can't have it both ways. And I don't want to sound hard on Boeing. I love Boeing, and I wouldn't be where I am today, which is alive and healthy, if it weren't for Boeing. My father flew a series of Boeing airplanes. Boeing has made the best flying vehicles in the world, according to my judgment. I would say Sukhoi is right up there. That's a Russian counterpart. And even then, Sukhoi uses Boeing uninterruptible autopilots in their airliners, such as the one that went down on the 9th of May of 2012. And that was Sukhoi Superjet at Mount Salak, S-A-L-A-K, Indonesia. And I find it remarkable, Patrick, that when I told Russia what happened to their aircraft, less than 48 hours later, the Russian KGB and GRU were using my words, and they were saying that it has come to their attention that their Sukhoi Superjet could have been the victim of a remote hijacking electronically, and they're absolutely right. They went on to say that the United States has that capacity, in other words, to keep this orderly. Back on the 9th of May of 2012, the aircraft was driven into Mount Salak. 2 days later, the Russian authorities, quoting in this case me, and I don't mean that in an egotistical way, but they were quoting me and David Hawkins, and I sent a letter directly to Vladimir Putin, and I sent it to the manufacturer, Sukhoi, and I told them, you know, your airplane wasn't bad. In fact, your airplane was 3 years ahead of the competition, Bombardier. Bombardier is up in Canada, and it's interesting, but Warren Buffett, the billionaire from Omaha, had a huge financial stake in the Bombardier CS, I think it's called CS-100 and CS-300. They're mirror images of each other. The Sukhoi jet and the Bombardier jet look identical, and they were both to compete with the Brazilian Embraer jets. However, the Russians got out of the gate first, and their aircraft was 3 years ahead of Bombardier. So I'll just ask you a question. That there's no way in the world you know this question is coming, but I think you'll have the answer on the tip of your tongue. If Warren Buffett had a huge position with his Berkshire Hathaway in Bombardier aircraft, who in the world would benefit more than Warren Buffett if the Sukhoi jet was driven out into Mount Salak? Do you have any guesses, Patrick?
No, well, yeah, is that a trick question?
It's a true question, and I think you got the answer already. I mean, it's apparent. These people will do anything for money. I think in the case of the Russian Metrojet, there's some money changing hands, and strangely enough, there's a new TV show or movie, I'm not sure which because I don't waste my time with either, but there is a new media production talking about how very powerful and wealthy and evil people bet on disasters. And this has been going on for a long, long time. But with these aviation disasters, which I had previously called the Baker's Dozen, because there were 13 aircraft that crashed consistent with my warnings, starting with Adam Air 574 on the 1st of January of 2007, near Indonesia, and the last one in the Baker's Dozen was the German Wings 9525 that had Andreas Lubitz at the controls when it was hijacked electronically and steered towards the big dam. I can't remember the name of that lake. Somebody in my chat room will probably remind me of the name of the lake, but the Airbus in question that Andreas Lubitz was vilified in the fact that he was a he was a hostage of an electronic hijacking, and everybody in the media said he was the cause of it, which is impossible for lots of reasons we don't have time to discuss right now. But the French Air Force shot down German Wings 9525, and the French Air Force had every reason to shoot it down because it was aiming directly for the dam at the south end of the largest freshwater reservoir in Western Europe. Now, I don't think, this is speculation on my part, but I do not believe an Airbus traveling at 400 miles an hour would have enough kinetic energy to breach that dam. But what we saw in 9/11 and what we saw in Katrina and what we saw with Extortion 17 is these evil people that are doing all these false flags, they will always give you a visual product to look at. In other words, they will fly, in this case of German Wings 9525, they would have been more than happy to fly that Airbus 321 right into the dam so that eyewitnesses could say, well, the airplane flew into the dam and then the dam was breached. And if that were to happen, it would starve a lot of people upstream from fresh water for not only their consumption and sanitation, but also for their crops. And, of course, downstream, it would wipe out a lot of infrastructure. So the French Air Force, with their three Mirages on that day, which was March 24th of 2015, I believe had every right to protect the French dam and destroy the Airbus. And they didn't have much time to do that. But let's get back to the Russian thing, because the Russian Metrojet, I'm going to ask you if you have any idea, and this is not a loaded question, because I'm thinking on my feet right now. And you can ask me the same question I'm going to ask you, but who do you think geopolitically would be best served by the Russian Metrojet going down in the Sinai?
Well, the main beneficiaries that would come to mind are, one would be the NATO cartel, because I look at the talking points which are being floated in the U.S. media, which primarily are moving right now towards this disaster should have a negative effect on Vladimir Putin and cause Russians to question why he's intervened in Syria. And so it's designed to turn public opinion against Russia or get them to double down on their intervention in Syria as well by framing it as a terrorist attack or an ISIS attack. So there's that beneficiary. But the other one is more complex and is not that easy to pin down, and that is Israel. So as you know, the Sinai Peninsula, and as everyone should know, this land patch is a point of contention, between Israel and Egypt for a number of years now. And they also fought a war over it. The Six-Day War in 1967, was fought over that very patch of land. And right now there is a 700 U.S. peacekeeping troops stationed in the Sinai for one reason only, to basically monitor, Egypt and Israeli activity, so that a war doesn't break out and Israel doesn't try to take back that part of Egypt, which it believes it's part of Greater Israel, and is been promised to them. I get, well, the Zionists would tell you it's been promised to them by God in the Bible, but in modern times it's just a question of might is right, I believe. So, and also Saudi Arabia could be a big beneficiary in the GCC countries, because this could be a way of sending a message to Russia, like, you know, basically stay out of our business, basically. So if you believe in regular terrorists that are independent, organic jihadists, and you believe in that sort of fairy tale, then you can just carry on and follow the little bouncing red ball along the narrative here. But if you understand that a lot of these terrorist entities are controlled and managed by clandestine intelligence agencies, then it has a whole different perspective in looking at this issue. So that I'll throw Israel, the CIA, British intelligence, Saudi Arabian intelligence, I'll throw all those into that bucket.
Well, our buckets are very similar, because I, as you were speaking, I was coming up with my own answer, and I think the organizations that are best served by having that very unfortunate event where 224 lives were lost innocently, all of which, of course, would have paid about $11 million per in reinsurance, which brings us back to Warren Buffett, because he's got a reinsurance company in Chicago and probably some other cities.
Oh, yeah.
I think the beneficiaries would be Israel, City of London, where you can say MI6 or whatever. And also, I think the the John McCain camp, whoever he is, and there's a question mark, big question mark in my mind. I don't know if you knew this, but in 2008, I filed treason, excuse me, I filed treason charges on John McCain in writing, and of course, nothing was ever done. But one thing that was a nice side effect was I was living in Minnesota, and according to the law and the statute, anyone who wants to report a treason needs to send it to a governor, a single governor, or a single chief justice or judge or justice. And in my case, since I didn't just fall off the vegetable truck, I sent it to two governors, that being John Hoeven of North Dakota, he's now a U.S. senator, and Governor Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota, and I sent it to their two chief judge or justices, whose name are Vander Wally in North Dakota and Anderson in Minnesota. And yet nothing was done in terms of investigating McCain for the serial treasons that he and his family have been part of going back to World War II. Having said that, when I did file the treason charges with Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, he was immediately taken off the running of the, he was running for vice president with McCain, and due to the, I believe it was the singular catalyst to get him off the ticket, I believe, was my filing of the treason charge against his boss, McCain, who I characterized as a little short guy that's constipated and constantly in a bad mood. And he also constantly lies and he makes errors. I understand that he had a slip of the tongue recently involving Turkey and a missile. I also know that 2 days, it could have been 3 days, probably you've seen the YouTube, where he's suggesting on about the 28th or 29th of October that maybe what it'll take to get the people's attention is shoot down a Russian aircraft or two. And, of course, that was just 48 to 72 hours before the Russian aircraft came down, which in my mind indicates the potential for foreknowledge. And in the case of McCain, he and his right-hand man, Lindsey Graham, preference unknown, had been clamoring for war going back to 2012. And, you know, the kind of stuff I'm involved in, Patrick, is rather unusual, to say the least. But I would encourage any of your listeners who've never heard me speak about these things before, I would encourage them to Google Putin, P-U-T-I-N, Assad, A-S-S-A-D, plus two words, and I'll spell them both, CRISP, C-R-I-S-P, foreplay, not the kind you're thinking of, but F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y. So we've got Putin plus Assad plus CRISP foreplay plus McCain plus Lindsey Graham. And in that Google pairing, you will see that the nuclear attack promised for Charleston, South Carolina, I think that's where it was promised, it never occurred because some white hats in the military disabled that potential. But these little, they're like chicken littles. Lindsey, I call him Light Loafer Lindsey. I don't know if that's offensive to him. It's probably not. It's probably a compliment. But Graham and McCain are always talking about, if we don't do something dramatic, we're going to be attacked. Well, the only way they could possibly know that is if they're in on the potential attack. And I'm going to blow you out of the water now with something you've never heard before. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. If you wanted to disable the entire United States Air Force, the flying assets of the United States Navy and the United States Marine Corps, and I know that you're not an aviation expert, but you don't need to be to answer this question. Anybody in your chat room could answer this question. But if you wanted to totally inert or stop the flying power of the United States military, do you think that if none of the aircraft had fuel, that would stop them? By the way, the answer is yes.
Yeah, that would be a good start.
Okay, are you aware of the ongoing battle over the last 8 or 10 years to upgrade the United States Air Force air refueling? In fact, right now today, the bulk of the air refueling tankers are KC-135s, which started rolling out of Boeing in 1956, and I think they continued to roll out until around 61 to 62. But we've got all of our military relies on 60-year-old tankers to get them fuel, and there's a brand-new Boeing product called the KC-46A. I think the name of it's Pegasus. I'm not sure of that. It doesn't matter to me. It is, in fact, Kilo Charlie 46 Alpha. And if you wanted to disable the entire military aviation assets, all you have to do is deny them fuel. If I were to suggest to you that there's a French autopilot in these brand-new Boeing tankers, would you think that's a reasonable act for the United States military to put French autopilots in a Boeing tanker?
That sounds extremely unreasonable unless there is, well, I don't know, unless the plot behind the James Bond film, which I saw last night, Spectre, of all 9 intelligence agencies working together as one unit, unless that's true, then I would say that's a very unusual field.
I think it's very unusual, too, and I don't think any of your listeners, unless they work for Thales, T-H-A-L-E-S, or the FAA, and I'd rule the FAA out because they're a bunch of ignoramuses, and I don't mean that in a critical manner. I mean that because I've been telling the FAA since 2006 that they have a problem with the illegal modification of Boeing aircraft, but not just Boeing, also Airbus, Embraer, Sukhoi, and Bombardier. They all have uninterruptible autopilots. That means they are all effectively latent, L-A-T-E-N-T. They're latent drones, meaning at any point where some nefarious power wishes to take control of the airplane, like I believe they did in the Metrojet on, let's see, the 31st of October, like they did with Malaysia 17, which was, in fact, the same airframe as Malaysia 370, and all of these other Baker's Dozen, which now, of course, is 14, so I can't say Baker's Dozen anymore, but all these aircraft that have gone down, I warned the United States government via the FAA, the FBI, the Airline Pilots Association, Navy Intelligence, and some other offices. I told them it'll be 9 years ago on December 10th. So 8 years and 11 months ago, I told the United States government that they had a problem, and they did absolutely jack diddly. And, you know, at some point, the international community is going to hold the United States of America accountable for these wrongful deaths. And you can't get murder charges when you have no evidence, but you can get wrongful death charges as long, and you're given, you're granted, you are afforded an aggressive inference of guilt. And so I'm going to claim right now, live on your radio show, that I, Field McConnell, would be more than happy to charge the FAA and the Airline Pilots Association with wrongful death, perhaps, I think, up to around 1,100 people. I'm not sure, we'd have to do the math. Fortunately, some of those deaths occurred on the morning of 9/11 when the aircraft were almost empty of passengers because the flights in question had all been canceled and then reinstated at last minute. So they manipulate these aviation events, but the problem is the evil parties that have been betting on this and benefiting from reinsurance and also silencing certain individuals. In the case of German Wings 9525, there was a woman who had worked for Booz Allen that really needed to be quiet, and so she died on the 24th of March of 2015.
And just quickly, Booz Allen Hamilton is a major contractor for the NSA, for the CIA. That was the company that employed Ed Snowden, and that company is owned by the Carlyle Group, okay, which is a part of the sort of the Bush military industrial crime family business, basically.
Yes, and the Carlyle Group was directly involved in the planning of 9/11, and some of the planning took place in Canada, some of it would have taken place in Chicago, Montreal, and England. And in the week, there's always an Achilles heel somewhere, because these raging egomaniacs with a lust for blood, they don't really know what they're doing. And that was evident on 9/11 when a 41-minute delay was imputed against Flight 93, which saved the United States of America from being turned into what they're still, the cabalists are still trying to turn us into something, which is not the United States of America, or even the corporation of the United States of America. They want us to go away, and you know, frankly, I'm offended at that, and I want the perpetrators of 9/11 to go away, and their weak links in the planning of the 9/11 false flag. They deferred to England on aviation events, and two of their experts, if you want to call somebody with uncontrollable flatus an expert on anything other than Bernoulli's principle, Prince, whatever his name is, the really old geezer married to the Queen, he was the leader of the Airline Pilots Association over there in England. It's called GAPAN. They've changed their name now since Abel Danger exposed them over 9/11. Now they're called the Worshipful Company of Air Pilots and Navigators or some such nonsense. But they had this bonehead prince that hadn't flown an airplane probably for 40 or 50 years. They had him and a retired senior officer from the Royal Air Force, whose name at the time of his death was Lord Timothy Garden. Lord Timothy Garden helped with the planning of the flying events of 9/11, and one of the contributors from the U.S. side that knows nothing about anything at all would have been Hillary Rodham Clinton. She got the intellectual property of the QRS-11 from its owner, which is BEI, Bravo Echo India Corporation, and the QRS-11 was a device that went into Raytheon products, especially supersonic missiles, air intercept missiles, and ground attack missiles, air-to-ground missiles called AGM, air intercept missiles called AIM. Hillary Clinton doesn't know anything. She might like to wipe her server, but she can't, you know, design a missile control system.
And this was so through the this was through
friend. My,
sorry to interrupt, Phil, but that was
Rose
Law Firm. That was the acquisition of that technology, which was developed by BEI, right?
That's absolutely true. And the attorney that she worked for, the guy that was in charge of Rose Law, at least for that project, was a guy whose name I can't pronounce because it's French, but it sounds a lot like Joe Dujoir. And the intellectual property custody chain starts with my sister, Christine Marcy, who called me in December of 1988 and asked me how to make JPATS aircraft bulletproof when it comes to hijacking. So I discussed with my sister, who was absolutely treasonous and evil. And for your listeners who have not heard of my sister, her name is spelled K-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Christine, surname Marcy, Mike Alpha Romeo Charlie Yankee. And if anybody can't sleep tonight and they want to be entertained, they could just Google my name, Field McConnell, and my sister's, Christine Marcy, and you'll see that we are as far apart from each other as East is from West and as good is from evil. And I have absolutely no hesitation to name names. I would like to name a whole lot of names, but I think the treasonous acts by the McCain family, at least three generations, which include the cover-up of USS Liberty, which that brings us back to Egypt, doesn't it, Patrick?
It does bring us full circle, actually. There's a couple of...
Patrick's mic.
Can you hear me? Sorry. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, I can, loud and clear.
Okay. So there's a couple of things I wanted to touch on that we grazed over quite a few significant things. But firstly, I won't spend time on this, but I just want to point out that, so you're saying, if you're the reason why Governor Pawlenty dropped out as John McCain's VP running mate in 2008, right? That's what you said, right? That you're the catalyst, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I believe that.
Then that means you have to take responsibility. Yes. You have to take responsibility for giving us Sarah Palin. So it's your fault, Field.
Yeah, well,
where would the Tea Party be without
you,
Field?
I've been blamed for worse, but as far as Pawlenty goes, I don't know where are they anyway. I haven't heard. Are they active anymore? I'm not being evasive or dishonest.
Yeah.
I just haven't heard anything about the Tea Party in a long time.
No, neither of anyone else, but they're still active, but they're waning in influence, basically. But yeah, they're still around. So is Sarah Palin, unfortunately.
Well, let me point out something else. Yeah, let me point out something about Plenty. He didn't learn much the first time he got hit over the nose with the newspaper. So then he ran for president 4 years later, and when he went to the caucus or whatever they called it in Des Moines, Iowa, which is the first in the nation, he put on a big smiley face, and he said immediately after the straw poll or whatever they did, he said that he was disappointed that he came in third, but he was in it for the long haul. Well, the long haul lasted from about 3 p.m. on that Saturday until the 10 o'clock news, and on the same day that he said he was in it for, I'm not making this up, but I am, you know, part of the process. But he said at 3 p.m., you know, I'm in it for the long haul. At 10 p.m., it was announced that he'd folded his campaign tent. And what happened, Patrick, and I don't mean this in an egotistical, you know, I'm called to do what I do. Not everybody understands what called means, but I am called to do this, and I'm well positioned to do it. I mean, who else has a sister that planned 9/11? No one but me. But anyway, in the case of Plenty, I contacted every media outlet I could, radio, TV, and print journalists, and I said, I'm apolitical. I don't like politics, but if any of you out there are liberal and you don't like Plenty, I said, if you want to see him cringe, just ask him why he didn't forward the treason charges against John McCain that were given to him on the 6th of April of 2008 by Field McConnell. And see, a lot of people don't like to use their own name. Well, in this politically correct sewer that we live in called the United States of America, unless people, you know, put on their big boy or big girl pants and start using their real name instead of hiding behind some icon, we're not going to have much success bringing these guys to justice. But I use my real name, and I don't know who it was, but somebody in the liberal media must have raised the question in public to Tim Pawlenty. Say, Governor Pawlenty, do you recall that 4 years ago, a guy named Field McConnell from Glendon, Minnesota, gave you treason charges against your running mate, John McCain, and what, if anything, did you do over the last 4 years? So ends the Pawlenty experience. And, you know, if he cowers from the truth, he's not the only one. Al Gore got cowered into leaving. Janet Napolitano got cowered into leaving. All of these false flags involving gun control and airliners, they're all done on purpose, and it's by the same people. And if you want to call it the Israeli City of London, Carlisle, McCain, CIA group, well, that's a pretty small group. And, you know, Carlisle, Canada, was the funders of the 9/11 attack. And, you know, I've been saying that for 9 years, so it's a little late for libel charges, isn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, okay. I've got this John McCain clip. So this was from around the 28th of October, I believe that you said. I think that's correct. So basically before the Russian air disaster in the Sinai, John McCain is on record saying that, you know, we need to see maybe some Russian airliners get shot down for, you know, Russia to, you know, get serious and maybe get out of Syria. Go ahead and roll that clip, I think. Yeah.
Senator, if you were president in the middle of all of this, and you know, or you're charging as you did just now, and I assume you know more than I do, that the Russian fighters are targeting the very groups we are trying to help, would you shoot down those Russian planes?
No, but I would certainly make it clear. Well, I would do a whole lot of things. General David Petraeus testified before the Armed Services Committee 2 weeks ago. He laid out what we need to do. We need to stop the barrel bombing. We need to have a no-fly zone. We need to have a buffer zone for refugees. We need to provide
certain kinds of help. No, I know that, Senator, but if they are attacking the very guys who we want to see topple Assad, you would let American planes just to pass them and let them do that?
No, but I might do what we did in Afghanistan many years ago to give those guys the ability to shoot down those planes. That equipment is available.
Who would be shooting them down?
The Free Syrian Army. Just like the Afghans shot down the Russian. No, just like the Russian, the Afghans shot down Russian planes after Russia invaded Afghanistan.
But you hear what I'm saying? I mean, you could see how easily, as you pointed out to me in prior visits, how easily something like this escalates into something much, much worse. Are we at that stage?
I think it would be much, much worse. But this administration, this president, this Secretary of State, they aren't going to do anything that would escalate it. They're going to give them.
Okay, so that was a slightly different clip than I think the one that field that you were describing, but essentially it's the same thing. It's John McCain trying to basically reveal what his ideal agenda is going to be, which is absolute mayhem and bloodshed to achieve whatever petty objectives, geopolitical objectives he's been tasked to try to move ahead on the board. But so he's a psychopath. I mean, that's well known. But what's interesting is with regards, you know, they've been saying for weeks and weeks that, Russia's not hitting ISIS targets. They're hitting our Free Syrian Army. And then when this so-called bomb theory comes out, this ISIS theory of ISIS planted a bomb on this Russian metro jet, they're saying, well, of course, ISIS is in retaliation for Russia hitting them in Syria, when for the last month they've been, the U.S. and Britain and NATO have been claiming that Russia hasn't been hitting ISIS. I mean, nothing stacks up that's being said by Western politicians, their intelligence sources, and the media. They're completely tangled up in their own sort of web of lies, basically. And they're expecting us to swallow this latest chapter in the drama, which is that, hey, ISIS has snuck through security and planted a bomb. And so there's John McCain again. And so this reminds me of the USS Liberty Field. Exact same conditions, same location, same geopolitical attentions, and also some of the same geopolitical players involved in the tension. So Israel in 1967, tell us what you know about the USS Liberty Field, because I know you've studied this incident. What happened?
Well, I would add to the I would also suggest that among the other things that were the same between the two, we have the same Scottish surname players. The McCain family is all over these treasons. But as far as the attack upon the USS Liberty, it was an intelligence gathering ship that was off the coast of Egypt somewhere, and it was attacked by Israeli fighter aircraft that were disguised as Egyptian aircraft, and their intention was to sink the USS Liberty so as to draw the United States into a shooting war with Egypt. That did not occur. Only because the Russians intervened. There was a Russian warship somewhere in the vicinity of the Liberty, and the Russian warship responded to the scene of the Liberty attack. Excuse me, I said Liberty. Yeah, it is USS Liberty. And the attack had not been finished, and even though there was widespread death and a lot of damage, the ship was still floating. And when the Russians showed up, the Egyptians, not Egyptian, planes or pilots, they were Israeli planes and pilots, but they were painted with Egyptian markings, hence the term false flag. And so the Israelis had to run off before the Russians would be an eyewitness to the treason perpetrated, I would say, later on. It was the McCain family that covered it up. And so the intent was to kill everybody aboard the USS Liberty. The Israelis failed, the Russians showed up and saved the day, and then John McCain's father, up to the time he died in 1981, he probably died of embarrassment about what a loser his son was, but anyway, he died on an airplane somewhere between Maine and Europe. He had a heart attack, and, you know, I think that he probably deserved to have a heart attack, because he was the middle of three generations of treason practitioners. His father was a four-star admiral, and his father was involved in a event in World War II that, had it gone to its designed
endgame would have been the biggest loss of life in World War II, speaking of the Navy. It did not, at the last minute, maybe some white hat figured out what Admiral McCain Sr., the first generation of these traitors, was up to. But, you know, eventually some white hats will take charge. In the case of 9/11, a white hat that took charge was not the guy in charge of NEADS, Northeast Air Defense Sector, but rather some lower-level guy who, they had a lot of exercises going on 9/11, and in these exercises from the aviation side, they put up a lot of false returns or radar echoes, and some clear-thinking white hat ordered that the fakers, F-A-K-E-R-S, the fakers be removed from the radar screen, so suddenly the real battle picture became clearer, and the United States military started cleaning up the damage done to America on 9/11 by the Canadian and the... I'm not 100% sure the Canadians knew what they were doing, but they were, in fact, attacking the United States of America, and that was based on an agreement that was penned or signed by a Canadian general, Maurice, M-A-U-R-I-C-E, Baril, B-A-R-I-L, and his American counterpart, Henry Shelton, who has a textile degree from some public college in North Carolina. And you know what? If the United States of America citizens and military wants to put up with textile majors from some pissant college, I think it's time to shut down West Point, Air Force, Annapolis, Coast Guard, and the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, because just as one individual, my education cost the taxpayers $200,000. They're still getting value from me. What are they getting from John McCain? Nothing but treason and lies. Over to you, Patrick.
Yeah, that's yeah. A lot of people might agree with you on that. I think quite a few people actually. So let's just backtrack a little bit on a couple of things. Clearly, one of the beneficiaries of this Russian crash is they're already bringing out all these TSA. People, and they've had Jay Johnson being interviewed by Barbara Starr, who basically works for the Pentagon but claims to be a CNN correspondent, but she was really a Pentagon spokeswoman or man or woman person, sorry, person. So she's talking to Jay Johnson. So they brought in the TSA, the DHS, already into this conversation. Clearly, this is a big beneficiary, all these private contractors and the Circos of the world. We won't talk too much about Serco in this conversation, but we can save that for another interview. But the TSA, the police state, basically, the security state, the gravy train, the international gravy train that is the anti-war on terror security theater state. Okay, so empty out your water bottles and your little shampoo bottles and all this other sort of security theater. So this is a huge beneficiary, along with the City of London insurance syndicates and the reinsurance syndicates and all these people you mentioned. Now, you've traveled around the world. They're already bad-mouthing the Egyptian security at Sharm el-Sheikh Airport. Now, you've traveled around the world a lot, and so they're saying that they don't have what we have in the U.S. We have multiple layers of security at the TSA, and we have many layers of security that make it more difficult for a terrorist to penetrate all of our layers. Okay, now how does this stack up in your head, Field? Because you've been to many different countries. I know you're a very observant guy. I know when you probably walk into any airport, you noticing a lot of differences. Depending on what country you're in, and you understand how security works and who's working and what they're looking for. What have you observed in your travels over the years? How is it different in different countries? What have you seen?
Well, I think most countries are more serious than the United States of America. And I'm going to give you a specific example rather than make a subjective comment. I was going through security at Minneapolis, and I was in the employee line, which is expedited a little bit. I was on that day in history when this incident happened. I was the captain of a DC-10 flying international flights, and I was reporting for duty, and I came through the security machine, and I had to put my bags, plural, and some other things through the X-ray machine back then, and then I was just going to go through the device that scans your body for metal, and I was told by a TSA to hold my position and let four, and I'm not racist, and I'm not a gender Nazi, and I'm not homophobic, but here it comes. The TSA gentleman told me to stay put because four Africans, I think probably from Nigeria or Ethiopia, we have a lot of them in Minneapolis, four African immigrants needed to get to work in the kitchen, and as these four gentlemen, it's not their fault that people like Obama and George Bush invite all these people. In fact, we've been trying to fill our lower-end job force with people from outside the country for a long, long time, dating back to 1973 when Roe v. Wade caused 55 million American workers to be killed before they're born. But that wasn't the first. Charles Lindbergh Sr. said in 1913 that the Banker's Manifesto intended to create a situation where nobody's going to rock the boat against their country. Well, I'm rocking the boat against my country because this isn't the country I took four oaths to serve. Three of those oaths were the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Air Force, and the fourth oath will be declared when victory is achieved. But the fourth guy going through the machine, in other words, there's these four black Africans, and it's not their problem, it's a U.S. problem. The first guy went through, the second guy went through, the third guy went through, the fourth guy who spoke no English tried to go through, but he didn't have a photo ID. So the TSA guy said, stop, he doesn't have a photo ID. And number three turned around and said, oh, that's okay, he's with me, in English. And that was good enough. And so here I am, a 30-year airline pilot, with, not that they would know, but a top-secret clearance. And I'm having my toothpaste subjected to electronic manipulation while some guy that can't speak English from a foreign country is allowed to go right through security with no ID. That's in Minneapolis, and by the way, to this day in Minneapolis, there's an electronic sign as you approach the airport on 494. It says, if you see something, say something. Dial. Yeah, well, I saw something 9 years ago, and I said something 9 years ago, and I would love nothing more than to file wrongful death charges against Michael Huerta of the FAA and the Airline Pilots Association, because these 14 aircraft that have crashed since I blew the whistle, none of those people needed to die. And what did they die for? Well, they died for profit and for fear. The United States of America has been subjected to a fear attack long before 9/11, but 9/11, of course, was the most awesome display of fear-mongering, and 9/11 was false. 9/11 was not Muslims attacking the United States of America. It was the United States Senior Executive Service attacking the United States of America. It was elements of the sitting government and the CIA attacking the United States of America. It was elements of Canada, especially Carlisle, Canada, attacking the United States of America. And a lot of this was brokered, sponsored, and planned by Jesuits at the Vatican. Most people think Jesuits are religious personnel. No, they're not. They're military and intelligence personnel that are hiding out as religious people. And also the British intelligence scammers, whether they're MI6 or the City of London bankers. The groups that I've just mentioned are the attackers of 9/11. And the Muslims, not because they're Muslims, they were incapable of attacking us to the degree with the technology displayed, not because they're from Arab nations or because they're darker skinned than I am, or it's simply because they're young. And young men or young women could not have flown those aircraft with that degree of precision. Let me be rather unvague. On the morning of 9/11, there were 7,000 windows on the Pentagon, and the device that flew into Captain Gerald DeCanto's window just happened to get lucky. If you think one out of 7,000 is good odds. Also, they attributed this to my college classmate, who was the captain of American 77, which did, in fact, not hit the Pentagon. It was destroyed with malice aforethought. Call that murder. It was destroyed in Whiskey 386 airspace, And the controller for Whiskey 386 Alpha Airspace on the morning of 9/11, his military call sign, you can't make this stuff up, Patrick, his call sign was Giant Killer. Well, I would say to the senior executive service of the United States and to MI6 and to the Jesuits and to the Canadians, if you're going to kill the giant, which is the United States of America, you better do it fairly quickly. It wouldn't take a lot to get me interested in going over to Russia to be there on the 19th of December for a specific purpose, but I was born into an Air Force family. I lived on strategic air command bases. I used to participate as an elementary school child in the evacuation of MacDill Air Force Base, and we'd go out to get away from the target of a nuclear attack. They would make all of us dependents, meaning wives and children. We had to go to a drive-in theater several miles outside MacDill. And you know what? Russia never attacked us. And I've been to Moscow many times. I've flown with Muslim co-pilots. I've flown with Russian co-pilots. Their discipline is better than the United States airline community's discipline. And I'll say in one final comment that I am not the only airline pilot in the United States of America that didn't want to fly with an uninterruptible autopilot, because that's a big mouthful, Boeing uninterruptible autopilot. One syllable word, drone. Every airliner out there is a drone just waiting to be triggered. Mm-hmm. Patrick, over to you.
No, we're gonna pick that up after the break. We're gonna take a short station break, so stay right there. We're with Field McConnell here on the Sunday Wire, and we're getting into some quite heady territory, which we're gonna continue right after these messages. Stay right there.
Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger, faster.
or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharptec, nature's best-kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharptec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharptec.org.
Me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away.
Welcome back to the Sunday Wire. We're flying the friendly skies with our guest, Field McConnell. Well, not so friendly in this case, but we're back. And just before the break, you know, Field was sharing some of his experiences with us. Now, I've found, again, you know, traveling around the world, Field, and even in places where potentially there's a real potential terrorist uprising type threat. I'm talking about Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Beirut, and all these sort of airports. I've found the security to be very good, but they're not asking you to take your shoes off every 5 feet and you know, take your belt off and take your socks off every sort of 5 minutes. They seem to know what they're looking for. And they seem to be probably employing real security and real intelligence people to do the job rather than, I'll tell you what I witnessed. The worst bit of security theater I've ever witnessed was to go Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. I come through security and I ask for a pat down because I didn't want to go through Michael Chertoff's, a full body scanner contraption. And I sit there, Field, and what do I see? And you can't, of course you can't make these things up. They're incredible. I see a guy who's a math teacher and a public speaker who is a quadruple amputee. His name was Jeff, and he's getting swabbed down for explosives on his wooden limbs. And, they're saying, well, we have to treat everybody the same, right? This poor guy lost both arms and both legs. And he's getting swabbed down for explosives by TSA people with swabs. I mean, it was disgusting. And I was just sitting there. I couldn't believe this. This was in 2012. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, so I started talking to him. We start talking. We ended up having a drink or coffee over in the departure, by the departure lounge. And he's telling me they do this every time. He said, yeah, and they know me by name. I said, well, why are they bothering to do it? He said, well, you know, they say, you know, I guess everyone, they have to treat everybody the same. I said, but it's just, it's a ridiculous use of resources, isn't it? I see invalid grandmothers, great-grandmothers in wheelchairs, and it's a big kerfuffle going through TSA. I mean, this whole thing is just ridiculous. So you can't tell me they're allocating their resources wisely or spending their money wisely or employing people to use their brains and not to shout at you so that, cause you've got more than one laptop in the plastic thing or you don't have your belt off all the way. I mean, I don't know Field, but in a way it sort of shocks me and makes me a little bit upset to look at the gravy train, the industry that's formed around this, what I call security theater, when in fact none of this has any bearing at all on safety or security, 99.9% of it.
Yes, I agree with you. And someone in our chat room just put up a different definition of TSA, thumb-sucking something or other. But actually, the airline people have referred to TSA for many years as thousands standing around. And I don't mean to be irresponsible or flippant, but when I got into Minneapolis from Dallas, I left Dallas Thursday, I think it was Thursday, can't remember. It was Thursday night, and it was supposed to leave at 6:35. Because of a tornado, I actually was delayed until 1:15 a.m. I got to Minneapolis just before 3:30 a.m. And yet at 3:30 a.m., with no flight scheduled in or out, there were many, many TSA agents sitting around doing absolutely nothing.
They were doing something, Field. They were getting paid.
Yes, they're getting paid. And some people would say that they're a drain on the taxpayers. I get so tired of people talking about drains on taxpayers. The United States of America is a corporation. So the corporation has a budget. And the taxpayers, in fact, I'm sort of sorry I brought that up. I was having a nice weekend. I'm currently under attack by the IRS, and I'm going to attack them back this week. But the IRS is a privately owned corporation headquartered in Puerto Rico, and they are basically a collection agency. The money they collect goes to England, and the IRS is going to have a little problem with what I published this week, and I don't mean to start a tax revolt, but I do think that it's very important for Americans to understand that the IRS is a corporation. It's not a government office. And, I think that there's a remedy coming within, say, 60 days, maybe 90, but there are a lot of these infrastructures that are evil in the United States of America are being exposed and torn down in the near future. And there's a foot race. The people trying to destroy the United States of America and finish us off for good, they've got to really expedite things. And that's why I think they want to start World War III over in the Mideast. I think losers like McCain and Lindsey Graham and Hillary Clinton and Bill and Giuliani and my sister Christine Marcy, I think they are well aware that they are intellectually bested. In other words, the people that are serving the United States' best interest, which tend to be private citizens like myself and like yourself, we understand more about the evil than they understand about us. I mean, a very simple thing, like I don't think anybody in Navy intelligence, and by the way, I love Navy intelligence, it's just I don't think they have the intellectual assets to figure out the relationship between one five-letter word, F-L-E-C-K. I've put that out for years, that Paula Broadwell and David Petraeus and their little alleged tryst, it has a feature, or it's got a relationship to the word F-L-E-C-K that I don't think any intelligence community in the world has figured out yet. And until they figure those types of things out, they're surrendering the advantage to private intelligence networks, of which Able Danger is one, but there's many others. And these people that, let's call them the Kabbalists, they are so evil and so moronic or sophomoric, they keep going back to doing the same thing over and over and over. And it's been 8 years ago, Patrick, that we, Able Danger, put out a series of three videos, DVDs, called Pattern of the Crimes, Pattern of the Signs, and Pattern of the Times. And that's how we anticipate future acts against the people of the United States of America and innocents abroad, because they have to keep going back to the same plans. And if they have anything big planned, like, say, bigger than 9/11, and there's some people that are watching the West Coast because flight patterns, departures and arrivals in and out of LA Airport and Beale Air Force Base and other places are being rerouted due to alleged military activity under the water off the coast of California. I guess a very good question would be, whose military is under there? And I'm going to put you on the spot here, not intentionally, so if you don't know this, don't feel bad. Nobody listening knows this either. But back on Monday, the 8th of November of 2010, a mystery missile was seen by a news helicopter departing on a westward vector. The news helicopter was somewhere in the vicinity of San Diego. Do you recall that incident, Patrick?
No, I don't. I don't know that one.
Okay, well, that's an honest answer. That was one of the very first things that I told the government was going to happen. In other words, over the course of the last 6 or 8 years, I have occasionally put out a threat window very close to the time that the threat is becoming close up in terms of scheduling, and at 3:35 p.m. East Coast time on Monday, the 8th of November of 2010, I suggested to the government agencies that I report these things to that there's a really good likelihood that there'll be an aviation false flag impacting the United States of America in the time frame from 15:35 on Monday, the 8th of November, until 23:11 on the 11th of November, which was Thursday night. And about 4 hours later, a news helicopter in San Diego put their camera on a contrail that was being created by a missile going from the United States on a westward vector. That's you can Google it and you'll find it. It's referred to as the mystery missile. Uh-huh. To this day, the United States government and the military has not admitted what that was. And what that was an outbound obsolete ICBM that had been launched from Arizona, and it was going to go west, it was going to reverse course, and it was going to come back, and it was going to appear to threaten the continental U.S., but not to worry, because there was an exercise. Here we go with that exercise word again. There was an exercise that a intercept missile called a Raytheon THAAD missile would be fired to intercept the inbound ICBM, and that worked really well until the THAAD that was launched to intercept the threatening ICBM, which was obsolete, when the second stage of its propulsion was supposed to be fired, an electronic magnetic pulse prevented the second stage from firing, and so the intercept missile fell into the Pacific Ocean. Fortunately for the United States of America, someone else, and I don't know if it was China, Canada, or the U.S., but somebody else fired a intercept missile and took down the inbound missile. But on that day in history, the president, whose name is in reality is Barry Spatero, Punahou 79, he was over in China having an audience with the prime minister, the president, the chairman, whatever the guy that runs China, big China, not nationalist China. But Barry, boy, was over there, playing chopsticks with the leader of China when this international incident just about cooked off, because everyone in Southern California or Arizona, wherever the impact area of this missile would have been, they don't expect to be attacked by the United States. They expect to be attacked by someone outside the United States. And that was the first, I believe, the first of my many threat warnings that I've shared with the U.S. government. And the reason we can do this, in other words, the reason we can anticipate these types of false flag attacks is simply because the boneheads doing them keep going back to the same plans. It's like they have no original out-of-the-box thinkers. Two recent events, I guess you're from Arizona part-time, there was a threat against the Super Bowl, which, and I'm not a big sports fan or I wouldn't be talking to you on the radio now, I'd be watching the NFL, but there was a threat not only against the Super Bowl, but also previously the New York Giants had gone out to Seattle, and there was a tactical nuclear threat against that stadium for that game, which off the top of my head was in November of 2014. And one of the reasons why they would like to do a false flag in Seattle is because Pete Carroll, who is the coach of the Seahawks, is a notorious truther, and he doesn't believe any of the hogwash of 9/11, which means he's a pretty bright guy.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I'm familiar with Pete Carroll. I'd love to get him on my show one day, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So talking about drills, okay, talking about drills, on the same day and only, approximately 40 miles away from the Russian air crash in the Sinai last week, Israel staged its largest ever, I quote, this is from their press release, their largest ever Air Force and military exercise, international exercise, which included the Israeli Air Force and also members of the United States, the Greek and the Polish air personnel, all together squaring off against a, quote, fictional enemy during a two-week drill. to test advanced air capabilities and also many of the most advanced communication capabilities were on display during this exercise. Okay, so it's called a blue flag, hence the title of today's show, The Blue Flag and the Skyjack. So this was a blue flag exercise hosted by Israel right in the vicinity, in the very exact place and exact same time as the crash of this Russian plane. So this might just be a coincidence to some people, but I just do want to remind people that Israel is very capable of a number of avenues in electronic warfare as well as military. And I want to remind people that on the day of flight MH17 going down, there were two major similar drills, which were NATO drills. One was Operation Sea Breeze 2014, which ended on July 17, 2014. And the other one was called Rapid Trident 2014. And the United States just happened to, coincidentally, as they did over the Sinai on that day, because of the drill field, they had their most advanced spy satellite parked right over the exact spot of MH17 on the 17th of July 2014, and on October 30th, 31st last week, where this plane crashed. Hence the report which was circulating around the U.S. media about a flash of light that was caught on a U.S. satellite, and that started the whole script of that a bomb, ISIS had put a bomb on board. So this all initiated from the United States. So I'm saying that I don't believe necessarily in coincidences, but we can also talk about that this plane could have very well been hacked. It's been, you can hack from an iPhone, you can hack the ADS-B, the Automated Dependent Surveillance Broadcast System on the plane that's unencrypted, and also you can get in via the Aircraft Communications and Addressing Reporting System, ACARS, as well as Boeing and Honeywell uninterruptible autopilots as standard on Boeing and Airbus. So what I'm saying here, Field, is there's a number of things we're looking at, and we talked about the USS Liberty before, and we talked about the volatility of this region, and the whole geopolitical structure right now is in flux with Russia at the center. I don't believe in coincidences. I'm looking at all this. It seems like the perfect storm, okay? And I see a lot of opportunists trying to jump on the back of this airline tragedy in order to do a lot of things like score cheap political points or to get one-upsmanship in terms of public relations against Russia. And all of it looks dirty to me, is what I'm saying. So this drill is very real. There's a link and a whole report on 21st Century Wire right now about the Israeli air drill at the same place and time as this crash. And I'll let your readers and our readers make up their own minds and their own conclusions on this.
Can I add something to what you just said?
Sure.
Yeah, you're talking about the fact there's an exercise going on called Blue Air, and you're talking about how on 17 July of 2014, Operation Sea Breeze 2014 and Rapid Transit were deployed over MH17's final resting spot in the Ukraine.
Yes.
You probably remember that when Malaysia 370 was taken from the intersection called BITOD, and from there it turned back towards Malaysia, then it went on a pretty much direct routing to Diego Garcia, which is FJDG. There were two exercises ongoing involving U.S. forces over in that neck of the woods. One was Cobra Gold, and the other one was Cope Tiger, off the top of my head. And I believe, and at this point, I mean, I've said it so many times, and I've printed it. I'm very consistent. I believe that the evil party took the Malaysia 370 at Baitod intersection via the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, and they turned it back towards Malaysian airspace for purposes unknown to me, although I have some ideas that I'll keep to myself. I'll just put out that there's a couple of towers in Kuala Lumpur called the Petronas, P-E-T-R-O-N-A-S, towers, and where the towers are connected by a sky bridge, the dimension between the two towers
is 191 feet at the Sky Bridge, and the wingspan of a 777 is 195 feet. So if you were somebody that didn't know much about airplanes, you'd think, well, it couldn't fly through there, or it would damage its wings. Well, not so fast, Yak Breath, because the wings on a 777 have some plastic fiberglass type shrouds on the wingtips, which are not structural. Hang on while I ditch a phone call. Wonder who this is. Anyway, I know who it is. Sorry for the noise. Let me just...
It's okay.
Yeah. How do you like my ringtone? Hawaii 5-0.
I like that, actually.
Yeah. But I sort of like it, too, but not when I'm on the radio. When the aircraft threatened Malaysian airspace, the United States Air Force... and I've used the call sign EUKLA, Y-U-K-L-A, EUKLA 27. Was that, in fact, the AWACS that took Malaysia 370? No. In fact, I'll say very clearly, I made that up, EUKLA 27. But there was a EUKLA 27 that was involved in something nefarious previously, and that's why I like to use sometimes... I write fiction. Generally, I'm talking very precisely. In this case, I'm suggesting that a 777 could fly right between the Petronas Towers, and all it would do is it would shear off the fiberglass shrouds at the end of each wingtip. It wouldn't damage the airplane, but it would sure scare everybody. And this goes back to 9/11, where they scared everybody by having, and it doesn't matter if you want to call them holographic images, or which were put out after the fact to sort of, in my mind, take scrutiny away from the true facts of 9/11, which two Boeing drones with nobody on board hit Towers 1 and 2. But anyway, they keep giving us eye candy to look at, and that would have been wonderful eye candy if Malaysia 370 had flown between the Petronas Towers. But if that, in fact, was part of the plan, it never got put into action because... A AWACS, which the United States Air Force had deployed airborne in Cope, whatever it was called, Cobra Gold and Cope Tiger, it would have seen Malaysia 370 reverse course, and they would have. I got to say goodbye to their daughter. See you later. Yeah. Anyway, when it reversed course, the United States Air Force would have seen that, and I truly believe that benevolent forces inside that AWACS airplane decided, we're not sure who took Malaysia 370, but we're going to take it back, and we're going to get it safely to Diego Garcia, which is sort of a semi-secret base out there in the British Indian Ocean Territory, BIOT. However, unfortunately, in fact, let me stop there, because now this goes back to the Egyptian hit on the Metrojet. Do you recall that the case of the Metrojet, when it plunged from 31,000 feet or whatever down to the Sinai Desert, are you aware that there was no radio transmission, Patrick?
Yeah, I was aware. I was aware. And this is the same pattern we've seen with the German Wings flight and some of these other incidents where, you know, communication just completely cut off. So this tells me, again, this backs your theory of eye candy for the public, and then a Boeing Honeywell Airbus uninterruptible autopilot for the back end, and then a white hat intervening or the military shootdown to stop in the case of German Wings. But in this case, this could have been shot down too, Field. There's plenty of aircraft in the area with this the Israeli drill.
Blue flag.
Yeah. So this could have followed the exact same pattern that we've seen it before. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up, because it is the same pattern, when the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot or the Airbus uninterruptible autopilot, Sukhoi, Bombardier, or Embraer, pick one, doesn't matter, they're all the same, when it's triggered, several things take place immediately. One is the communication radios are shut down. So if I were... I mean, I'm not a pilot anymore, and I know what I am. I'm a 66-year-old old guy. But if I were flying an airplane and I lost control of it, yet it was flying in a safe manner, I would probably be somewhat relaxed knowing that it was taken by people that want us to get safely on the ground. However, I said that the radios are the first thing to go. Simultaneously to the radios being blocked, the transponder is blocked. And the transponder is a instrument where you can select a four-digit code like 7700 or 3100, both of which are significant foot stompers. But if someone wanted to say that their airplane was not under their control, they couldn't do it on the radio, but they could do it by squawking a hijack code in the transponder, except for guess what? When you hit the BUAP switch, that goes out too. So we got the radios going off, the transponder going off, the ACARs going off, and then there's one more thing that most of your listeners have never heard of before, I presume. That's called the ATI, and that's the automatic tranquilizer injector. And what the, it's not deployed with the first string triggering the BUAP, but it is armed. In other words, the ATI is armed so that if there's a reaction to the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, either among the passengers, the cabin crew, or the front end crew, they can be calmed by a colorless, odorless, tasteless gas that is pumped into the pressurized cabin, and the gas calms people. It can put you to sleep, and it can kill you. And let me just use a metaphor that most of the people, whether they use this product or not, are very well aware of. The ATI, the dosage can be selected. And if you and I, Patrick, and we've met each other, I think it's important that your listeners know that because, you know, I think we have pretty good respect in both directions. But if you and I sat down at a pub in England, like the Horwood House, where I'll be next May from the 13th to the 16th, if we sat down and we had a thimble full of scotch, nothing would change. Our pattern of speech would be the same. Our thoughts would be the same, and we'd feel the same. If we took a cup, like a, say an 8-ounce cup, and we drank 8 ounces of scotch all in one fell swoop, we probably wouldn't change until it got into our bloodstream, and then our speech would be slurred, and some of our mannerisms would be more relaxed, and we'd become jovial. If we took a gallon and drank it, we'd be dead. This is what happened on Malaysia 3-7.
We'd be dead, or we'd be working as a cartoonist for Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, they're not fooling anybody. The people, the cabal, call them what you want, the people trying to scare all of the global people into submission, they're falling short. Because in order to succeed, they have to scare everybody. They're not scaring me. They're not scaring you. And I just want to demonstrate something that nobody else that you've had on the radio show could probably do. I'm going to rattle off 7 call signs that are significant to 9/11, which was an exercise gone rogue. Those call signs are QUIT, quit, quit 25, quit 26, quit 27, then Venus, like VENUS 77, VIVI, VIVI 36, SWORD, SWORD 31, and WORD, WORD 31. These call signs are significant in that the first three, QUIT 25, 6, and 7, were the three F-16s that scrambled off Langley at 0932 and were taken off course. They should have been going directly up to the Pentagon to intercept what was bearing down on the Pentagon, but the United States Senior Executive Service caused them to be rerouted out to Whiskey 386 Alpha Airspace, where Giant Killer denied them entry and sent them back on a vector to Washington, D.C., where they arrived too late to observe the flying vehicle that hit the Pentagon. So who did that? Well, the United States Senior Executive Service. That's my opinion. My opinion's probably better than anyone else's at this point because no one else has been involved in this for the last 9 years and developed this fluency, if you will. But the significance of those 7 call signs, once again, I'll give them to you. QUIT 25, 26, 27, VENUS 77, VV 36, SWORD 31, and WORD 31. Somebody in the exercise that wanted the rogue nature and the false flag nature of 9/11 to be found by some cyber sleuth eventually Of all seven of those call signs, two of them were on the same aircraft. But let me just cover all four of those. The first three were F-16s. The other four call signs were E-4Bs, the flying doomsday machines. There's only four of them. During the transition from G.H.W. Bush to Bill Rockefeller, some people know him as Bill Clinton, the E-4Bs were taken away from the Strategic Air Command and given to FEMA. However, the four aircraft are still maintained at Offutt Air Force Base in Bellevue, Nebraska. Three of them are typically there. One of them is always at Andrews Joint Forces Base. What a bunch of garbage. You know, this gayness in the military is getting overwhelming, and pretty soon we're going to ditch the rifles and get pastel feather dusters, but over my dead body. These E-4Bs, three will typically be at Offutt where they're maintained and crewed. The fourth one is always on alert at Andrews Joint Forces Base, which is just north of Clinton, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., and there's only four E-4Bs. On the morning of 9/11, three of them were Venus 77, VV-36, and there's a little confusion because somebody who wanted this discovery to take place, oftentimes you'll see the third aircraft as being SWORD, S-W-O-R-D-31. Sometimes it's referred to as WORD, W-O-R-D-31. First of all, I'm not here to try to convince anybody to have a certain element of faith. I have an element of faith, and most people know what it is. But I don't care if somebody is a Muslim, a Hindu, an agnostic, an atheist, a Christian, a Catholic, or anything else. It doesn't matter to me what other people do. I think they should be able to live according to their values and see where it gets them. But on the morning of 9/11, somebody in the Air Force that wanted this false flag attack called 9/11 to be ultimately discovered, they assigned two call signs to the SWORD WORD aircraft. In each case, the number was 31. This is a little bit of a Bible lesson, and I'll back out of it real quickly. But whoever wanted 9/11 to be discovered understood the significance of using SWORD and WORD, because in Ephesians 6, it talks about the sword of truth being the word of God. That's it for the Christian lecture. But, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Christian, if it's Islamic, if it's Jewish, if it's Hindu. If it takes the mask off the old Lone Ranger and it proves 9/11 was a false flag, I think that Muslims, Jews, agnostics would be pretty happy that somebody put that confusion in there, so years later somebody else would discover it, and then that would add potency to the attack against those who attacked the United States of America on the morning of 9/11, causing the death of my college classmate Chick Burlingame, who was the captain of American 77, and it did not hit the Pentagon. It went out to Whiskey 386 Alpha Airspace, where American 77, American 11, and United 175 were all blown apart by Smacksonic, and they were blown apart with the full knowledge of the 100 people that planned the attack of 9/11. There would have been hundreds of thousands of people that were unwitting participants because of compartmentalization. But it's our belief, when I say our, it's the private intel group called Able Danger. We believe there were 100 people that had the whole scenario. One of those people was certainly my sister, Christine Marcy. Another one of those people was certainly Hillary Rodham Clinton. Over to you, Patrick.
Okay, so, yeah, you could cover quite a lot of ground there. But, one, you know, one of the things, there's two things I just want to point out that I think is very important to get on record here. You talked earlier in the show about the importance of getting access to the investigation scene, the crash investigation scene. And I've seen two temper tantrums in two air disasters, and I'll tell you which temper tantrums they were. There was a huge temper tantrum thrown by the NATO member states, and specifically America, that they couldn't get access to the crash site in the Ukraine, in the eastern Ukraine, of MH17. And another temper tantrum this week, that American investigators can't get access to the crash site in the Sinai, and they're already accusing Russia of hiding the truth and so forth. We have recordings of this, which we played on Thursday. Okay, so It's my understanding that some people would like to get access to the crash site in order to plant evidence, or in order to take away evidence, perhaps. But I think it's interesting, so you should look at the reactions of certain people after these disasters. The second thing is, and this is interesting, you may or may not know this, but with all the big concerns about terrorism and Al-Qaeda affiliates in the Sinai Desert and so forth, okay, this was more or less almost buried in the Western media in August this year. This is only a little while ago, I believe. I think it was, but a British plane carrying 189 passengers came within 1,000 feet of a rocket as it approached Sharm el-Sheikh. It emerged a couple of days ago. So this was Thompson. This is a big tour operator, Thompson Tours. They also operate charter flights to places like Sharm el-Sheikh for British holidaymakers from Stansted. It took evasive action after the pilot spotted what looked like a Stinger missile speeding through the air, 1,000 feet from the aircraft. The jet landed safely, and holidaymakers were told that they had been seconds from disaster. And the revelation comes amid British jihadists, claims that British jihadists had spoken about an ISIS mole at Sharm el-Sheikh Airport minutes after a metro jet crashed in the Sinai, killing 224 plus crew of the Russian metro jet. So this has all the makings of a contrived war on terror narrative once again, Field. And this didn't get any. So what was this, a dress rehearsal for the Russian crash? What exactly was it? We don't know. But I think it's interesting how this wasn't reported. If terrorism is the big problem and we need to be at high alert all the time, how come this didn't make the news in August? That's my question.
Oh, go ahead.
And this ISIS mole, British jihadist ISIS mole. I've had enough of these Jihadi John characters, the Deso dogs, all of these sort of cutout cartoon characters making these videos and all these moles and all this sort of stuff. It's just beyond a joke now, okay, for anyone to really believe any of this stuff. So this is all manipulation. This story proves to me that this is complete manipulation. You know, so how come this wasn't reported more at the time? That's my question.
Ready for my answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the report you're alluding to, the Thompson airliner with 189 people and the pilot taking evasive action, I read that too, and I saw a criticism of that report suggesting that the pilot wasn't named and a lot of other specific things were not named.
So is it planted? This could be a planted story, right?
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting. And I want to point out for your listeners who've never heard you and I engage in this type of discourse before that I didn't just fall off the vegetable truck like some other people, whoever she is, Rebecca Roth, who has a methodical illusion that she somehow can tell from her beverage cart what's happening in the international airspace. I take great exception to that. I believe she's probably paid to be a shill. However, I don't know that, so I would never besmirch her. But I've been doing this since 9/11. On the morning of 9/11, I sat and watched the aircraft, the drone, that was alleged to be United 175. I watched it over and over and over fly into the second tower. And back on that day in history, I was not only an airline pilot, I was also a retired interceptor pilot. Interceptor is a fighter-type aircraft used to go out, identify, and intercept or shoot down people that don't belong in your airspace. What I knew on the morning of 9/11 was the aircraft that hit the second tower was being flown by technology, not by humans. So it doesn't matter if you want to say the United pilots had guns held to their head and they did it. Nope. Impossible. The Muslims guys? Nope, it's impossible. How did I know that we were being lied to? From the body angle. The body angle of the aircraft suggested to me, and keep in mind I was entrusted
From the time I was 27 to the time I was 41, I was entrusted to go out middle of the night, go out alone or with two aircraft to make a snap decision whether something needs to live or die. And the way you make that decision is by observing the behavior of the flying vehicle, whether it's a drone or a manned aircraft. So after 16 years of flying intercepts, you know, I could judge with pretty much certainty that that aircraft that struck the second tower was going approximately 400 miles an hour. And then you get guys like Jim Fetzer and John Lear waving the BS flag saying, you can't fly that fast down low. And they're just full of baloney. I've done it, you know, I've gone supersonic down low, which is illegal unless you're over the water. And I'm not here to relive my past. I'm here to establish my claim that on the morning of 9/11, I knew we were being lied to, and I knew it not only from my visual assessment of the flight dynamics of United 175's drone replacement, also by what was in the media. In the media in Fargo, North Dakota, which is where I was living at the time, it was reported that three F-16s from Fargo had been scrambled at 0932 off Langley. Okay, there's a huge red flag. You never have three pilots on alert. Scramble means an alert scramble. It means you blow a klaxon, and pilots and mechanics run out to two aircraft that are in either or any of four alert facility barns. In other words, they have these aircraft in the equivalent of a big barn, and they're protected from the elements, and they're warmed to a certain temperature, and the aircraft are ready to go on a moment's notice. And so in order to scramble three aircraft, you would have to have foreknowledge, or you'd have to be involved in an exercise, because you'd never have a third pilot. It's like a fire station. You might have eight firemen on duty, and if it's a seven-alarm blaze, you might have to come up with 800 firemen, and you don't have them on duty, so you got to rob them from somewhere else. On the morning of 9/11, I knew we were being lied to. Every day since 9/11, I've learned more and more, and I feel very comfortable saying that the people who participated in the deployment of these Canadian-controlled assets on the morning of 9/11, if there was going to be an indictment, the indictment should be pointed at the United States Senior Executive Service, the Vatican Jesuit branch, MI6, Lord Timothy Garden, he's dead, you can't get him, Prince Philip, he appears brain dead, so you can't get him, and Canadian Maurice Beryl, who I believe was duped. And the reason I say Maurice Beryl was duped, he later was given a promotion, which reminds me, the chief of the Sheikh Al Sharm Airport was recently given a promotion. Excuse me. And that's consistent with another pattern. Are you aware that the Prime Minister of Malaysia was given a $700 million bribe shortly before MH370, Patrick? Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't actually, no.
Yeah, well, you know, Tom Ridge, the airport chief in Egypt, the president of Malaysia, a lot of people are getting paid well to sing Kumbaya and turn away from a false flag. But ultimately, it's we the people that are shedding our blood and losing our relatives and giving our lives to these things. And we the people globally, not just Americans, and also I would include Canadians, I would include the English. So what if Canada attacked America? So what if the British had them do it? And so what if the Vatican participated? It doesn't matter. We, the global people, need to stand up and say, we've had enough of these false flags, and you can go ahead and knock airplanes down. You got 14 that Able Danger's watching. But if we get up to 20, you know, it's just more profit for the people that are trying to scare us into submission. I will not submit. I can be dealt with, I can be killed, but I can't be forced to surrender. And I think it's time for people around the world to let our elected people know that they may be fooled, but we are not.
Now here's a question I'm going to throw to you, Field, and thank you for saying that. You know, I think that needs to be said, what you just laid out there for everybody. Very important that people consider that themselves, and how important that is. But so this is just out of Moscow, okay? I'm going to throw this out here, and I just need to see what you think the answer to this question is. So basically, whoever oversees civil aviation in Russia just announced on Thursday that it's suspending certification of Boeing 737 airplanes used by Russian airlines pending the resolution of what they said are safety concerns. My question is, the Russians know about the uninterruptible autopilots. Why? What would keep them from having those stripped from all of their aircraft in the way that the Israeli government has stripped it out of their fleet, and in the way that the Germans have stripped it from Lufthansa?
There's nothing to prevent that. It's just a matter of time. They have to take the aircraft out of service. Right now in our chat room, there's a gentleman who I'm well aware of who works in the industry, and I anticipate that he'll call me later today or tomorrow and tell me how long it would take to remove an uninterruptible autopilot from the E&E compartment where they're installed. But, you know, Boeing is getting really abused in this whole argument, because everyone, including me, I mean, there's people that think that I discovered the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, and a lot of people think that because of the YouTube that was put out the very day Malaysia 370 went down, which is called BUAP, Boeing uninterruptible autopilot. But you know, the truth is that Boeing is being victimized by General Electric. The component that is the third autopilot, is the uninterruptible autopilot, is a piece that comes from General Electric and installers at Boeing or Sukhoi, which uses Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, by the way, which is really a GE part, or the installers at Airbus or Bombardier or Embraer. They're told by their bosses, well, don't worry about what's in that component. Just stick it on the E&E rack, hook it up to the power, and we're good to go. Make sure you do a logbook entry. So, no, the only thing that it would take for the Russians, and if I go to Russia, Moscow or Kazan, K-A-Z-A-N, if anyone sees me going to Russia around December 19th, that will be a signal that the Russians appreciate the fact that I told them on May 12th what happened to their airplane on May 9th of 2012, and that is that their airplane was attacked by the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, and Russia was very quick to publish that. I think Russia is what we in America used to think of our country. I think Russia's got the high ground, the political high ground, the safety high ground, and I would believe that they could remove the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, including the logbook entries, in 30 minutes or less per aircraft. All you have to do is you have to have your nation or your airline industry admit that the piece is in there and remove it. It's a component. It's just like if you have a 1998 Volvo station wagon and the radio goes out, okay, good. You just go to a Volvo dealer and they pull out a bad radio and they stick a good one in. Same deal, except for in the case of Lufthansa, Israel, and the three ME3. ME3 means the Mideast three big airlines, which is Qatar, Qatar, and to do United Arab Emirates, okay, the Emirates airline, and Etihad, E-T-I-H-A-D.
Yeah, Abu Dhabi. Yeah.
Yes, and I believe those three airlines, which are called the ME3, I believe they've removed the autopilots. And the reason I say that is because June of last year, June of 2014, the chairman, CEO of Emirates, made a public plea for information. If anybody knows what happened to Malaysia 370, please tell me, because I, Timothy Clark, am the CEO of the biggest fleet of 777s in the world. So he didn't have to ask me twice. I sent him an explanation of what happens to Malaysia 370, and I believe that those three ME3 airlines, Qatar, Etihad, in Emirates, I believe they've removed the uninterruptible autopilot. So your question about Russia is simply this. I have not a direct link to the Russian government, but I have a one-off cutout, and I'm not going to be spooky or vague. It's the military attaché in Washington, D.C. I've got his email address. I send them everything I know, and they don't vet it. They send it directly to KGB and GRU, and I just killed a fly. But anyway, from KGB GRU, if they think it's significant, you can bet your bottom dollar that Vladimir Putin finds out. And I could be construed by some to be not patriotic. wrong. Oh, the people that did 9/11 are the people that are non-patriotic. I'm as red, white, and blue as anybody you've ever met, but I'm not an idiot, and I'm not living my life in a vegetable truck with a bushel basket over my head. I'm out there observing, listening, reading, and interpreting, and I would love nothing more than to go to Russia and be in the company of Vladimir Putin when he makes the statement that Russian aircraft are now free of these illegal modifications that they would not have known about when their aircraft were delivered, just like the Germans. And the guy's name in Germany that talked about this was von Bülow. He was a government person. They got rid of the, well, when the Boeing 747-400s were delivered to Germany, Lufthansa noticed they had these rogue parts, and they stripped them out. It cost them $800 million. But you know what? If you got 400 people crammed onto a Boeing, and it's driven into a mountain, well, you got about $500 million in insurance costs. So,
exactly.
Yeah, Russia, Germany, Israel, and the Mideast is getting rid of this garbage. I almost use colorful language. But what's wrong with America? Why does Michael Huerta at the FAA, and why does Susan Kalfas, Kalfas, K-A-L-F-U-S, she's an attorney at ALBA. Why have the U.S. government, FAA, FBI, and the Airline Pilots Association, why haven't they done what Israel, Germany, and the Middle East have done? And I think Moscow's doing it right now. You know, get rid of the garbage that's killing innocent people, and let the chips fall where they may. Over to you, Patrick.
Well, you know, my first observation there is, wouldn't the bottom fall out of the insurance and the reinsurance market if it's proven that any of these planes were remotely hijacked and some of these accidents weren't just by accident or by terrorism, that they're actually but because of a piece of equipment or software technology that's embedded in the airplane itself, that the bottom would fall out of that, that would trace all the way back to the city of London. I would imagine that's where the money ends up. But that's the first thing that comes to mind there. The second thing is, you know, you talked about, it's a safety issue. So this is about, well, you know what the world's safest airlines are. If you don't want to befall any of this type of tragedy, and you want to fly one of those airlines that doesn't have that on board. Okay. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it as well is, you know, from where you're coming from, and I know a lot of people are going to think, wow, this is crazy stuff that Field McConnell's talking about here, but actually you filed a lawsuit in the U.S. courts in 2007, I believe, basically wanting full disclosure from the airlines on behalf of the airline pilots of the United States. Is that right?
Yes, I filed three lawsuits, actually. The one you referred to in 2007 was civil case 3:07-CV, Charlie Victor, -CV-24, which was titled Field McConnell versus ALPA and Boeing. That was filed on the 27th of February of 2007, and 4 days later in London, Boeing admitted they had the uninterruptible autopilot, and they went on further to say that within 2 years, every airliner in the world would have that modification made to it. That's Boeing's own words, not mine. But I've been on this project for a little while now, and I'm going to hang in here until we have victory.
Yeah, and also, and speaking of, you know, MH370, there are certain gatekeepers in the media whose job, I believe, this is my opinion, but I believe their job is to basically manage these talking points around these stories and to divert any serious inquiry into the true causes of some of these. The perfect example is MH370 and the person who was jumping up and down screaming when a flaperon was found on an island in La Réunion in the ocean off the coast of Madagascar. He was going wild. His name is Richard Quest. He works for CNN under the dubious title, well, not anymore anyway, of aviation correspondent. Now he's back to doing what he does best, which is a meaningless business and stock hyping program called Quest Means Business. But he was their so-called aviation correspondent. And just, I'm going to play this quick. We're going to wrap up in a couple minutes. But roll clip 5. Here's Quest trying to control the Russian plane conversation on CNN. Go ahead and roll this.
So this is what they're saying. Recordings on the black boxes here. Let's be precise. The cockpit voice recorder, the flight data recorder here on these boxes revealing the sound of an explosion heard from the cockpit on board this Metrojet aircraft before it crashed into the Sinai, while an examination of the flight data recorder shows no sign of mechanical malfunction. Of course, all of this back up the suspicions and what we've been hearing from intelligence, both from the United States and the UK, that someone got a bomb onto this plane. I have CNN aviation correspondent Richard Quest with me, Paul Cruikshank, CNN terrorism analyst, and also CNN's Fred Plytkin standing by in London. So a lot of pieces of this. Richard Quest, first to you. So cockpit voice recorder, flight data recorder, tell me more about what they're finding.
Okay, so what we are, if the France 2 report and everything is true, and there's no reason to believe it's not, what they're saying is that on the CVR, cockpit voice and flight data recorder, there is a split second of noise and parameters before the thing just goes dead. The power is cut. And this is exactly the same as we saw with MH17
over Ukraine
and TW-800 off the Long Island Sound. It's this split second, and it's a millisecond where you hear an explosion of some description. And you see all the parameters go haywire before the power is completely lost. Now, if what this report is accurate, they've now analysed that, they've now seen what it says on the CVR, they've heard it, and they can identify it. Because if the plane was just flying along and something went wrong, it would be several minutes before the plane fell out the sky. Even if there was a catastrophic failure of the airframe, it wouldn't just be that.
So it's
that nature of that suddenness and that split second that you hear on the CVR and the FDR beforehand that you can now start to say, we can analyze that backwards.
So this is hard data, Paul, that we are now hearing, again, from France 2, from the investigators who have been looking at this on the ground, that is jiving with what we've been hearing from our own reporting, Barbara Starr and others, what they've been getting from U.S. intelligence and also from the Brits.
Absolutely. And now we're seeing a confluence between the intelligence picture, the chatter, the intercepted communications of ISIS in Sinai, and what they're hearing on the black boxes. Both suggest bomb at this point. Both suggest a terrorist attack. This would be the most significant terrorist attack since 9/11. I think we're going far along in that hypothesis at this point.
Let's remind people, we talked about this yesterday, remind people some of our reporting, it's the specificity of the chatter, right? And it was an uptick of chatter, specifically in the Sinai. We knew there were fears of extremism for a long, long time, but it was really after this happened. I was talking to Evan Perez, our justice correspondent, about this yesterday. There was bragging about this. Why is all that significant?
Well, it's exactly what you'd expect a terrorist group like perhaps ISIS in Sinai to do. If they just had this huge success, they would be very, very excited about it. They'd want to tell each other about it, tell each other perhaps a few of the details of how they did. And I think some of the specifics of the intelligence about an insider at the airport putting the bomb potentially directly in the cargo hold, that all appears to come from those intercepted communications, Brooke.
Fred Plytkin, let me bring you in live in London, because the other piece of this that we're learning, the U.S. and the U.K. have now shared their intelligence with Russia.
Okay, so the first person you heard was Richard Quest, and the second gentleman, his name was Paul Cruikshank, who to me is looking more and more like a kind of a British intelligence plant at CNN, or some sort of a strange creature that tries to steer the narrative into the sort of area of the cartoon jihadist narrative. But so Richard Quest, did anything you heard him say, Field, make any sense to you?
No, in fact, I have to admit, honestly, I wasn't really listening to him because I find him so obnoxious.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and if he likes to play with himself in Central Park while he has a pocket full of drugs, well, that's great, but why does CNN keep him on the payroll? And you've answered the question, because he'll go ahead and read the script. Anyone within the sound of your voice or mine that's still watching the mainstream media really needs to rethink that, because these people, just take a look here in Wisconsin, I watch
I don't watch on purpose, but sometimes I'm in a public place where they have TVs on, and I see the quality of the newscasters locally, and they don't have a clue as to what they're talking about. They're just reading a script. And, you know, I think that it's way past the point where the global commoners, which is who I represent, I don't care if somebody's white, black, red, yellow. I don't care if they're old, infirm. I don't care if they're medical problems. I don't care if they have a lifestyle different than me, if they have no religion or some religion different. Actually, I don't like religion. Religion's just a bunch of rules that don't work. But I think it's time for the people that are paying these script readers, which would be four families roughly, 96% of the media is owned by four families, I believe. No one should pay attention to what they're reading, whether it's Richard Quest, who just happened to show up in the cockpit with a co-pilot that was flying with Captain Zahari on Malaysia 370. You know, these guys, the media people, they present themselves as experts on something, which reminds me of the Seals and Croft song from the early 70s, King of Nothing. These people in the news media, they don't know their rear end from third base, and they should just be quiet.
Well, I can agree with you more there. I mean, I'll also point out in that clip, if you want to rewind it, you're listening after the live show here, you can go back and listen to it afterwards. Richard Quest used a really common neuro-linguistic programming device, which I caught there. And if you read some of these NLP books, you can pick up some of the tricks. He said, and he does this quite a lot, he said, if this is true, and there's no reason to believe it's not, he's talking about a French report from France too. If this is true, and there's no reason to believe it's not, that, my friends, is neuro-linguistic programming. That is manipulation writ large, done through the mass media by expert practitioners in that thing that Tony Blair did so well called NLP. Okay, so I just wanted to point that out to people who are want to learn something. That was our little tidbit of the day. So, Field, we'll probably leave this conversation right there on that sour note. I don't want to leave the sour taste of Richard Quest in people's ears, but that should sort of underline the level of fraud and disingenuousness that we have to endure on a daily basis. I will watch the mainstream media on behalf of my listeners who don't want to have their brains exploded. I'll do it, and I'll deconstruct it, and I'll show them what the propaganda is, you know, how they construct their propaganda for educational purposes, Field. I'll do that for my listeners, but I don't advise that people spend as much time looking and listening to these people maybe as I do, but you can go ahead if you want. I look at it like sports, basically. So instead of watching baseball and football, this is what I do. So it's a kind of a public service of sorts. Field, look, you know, some great stuff we've talked about here. I encourage people to go back and rewind it, listen to some of the details, some of the stuff that you brought up. You can go and cross-reference that over at abledanger.net. That's Field's website. There's a link to Able Danger on our show page right now. If you look at the show description, you'll see next to Field is his website, Able Danger. Some great information in there. It's a bit of a cryptic puzzle, and I'm saying you have to take the information from Able Danger and you have to apply it to other stuff that you see. Is that a correct assessment there, Field?
Yes, and I want to say that over the years I've had many people criticize me for how I write, but see, I'm not trying to write. I'm just looking at my chat room. I see names like Ginger Cookie, James Kinn, M4, Sable, Straight Shot, Sunshine. I'm not trying to write for nice people that are truly trying to find answers to life's mysteries. I'm trying to write directly into the hearts, if they have one, and minds of the intelligence community globally, and let them know that they are not fooling us. And so I challenge intelligence agencies, law enforcement, governmental offices, I challenge them to do their homework and figure out what it is I'm saying when I say things such as there's a relationship between FLECK, Fleck, and Paula Broadwell and David Petraeus. You know, it puts them on the defense. And so far, we haven't seen anybody that can go toe-to-toe with us in terms of intelligence. That sounds rather boastful, and maybe it is. I don't mean it that way. But, you know, we have our mission to perform. I was called to this mission, and basically, in a nutshell, the mission is very easy. Expose evil.
Yeah, it's a simple mission statement there. Simple objective. So, Field, appreciate your time. We'll be watching your work very closely as well, especially in these troubling times with these sort of troubling events. I really hope that, this or any of these airline disasters are not used to leverage, nations closer towards, more military conflict. That's my sincere hope. And I hope that some of the information that we presented here can help in that process, hopefully. So thank you so much for what you do, Field.
Well, you're very welcome, and I appreciate your kind words, Patrick.
So there he is, Field McConnell, abledanger.net. This has been another edition of the Sunday Wire. We will be back next week. We'll be back with a slightly different program. Because the studio will be, half the studio is on the road next week. So we'll be here live, but with a slightly different format, and it will be interesting and will be fun and will be hard hitting and it will be informative and all the rest of it. So thank you so much. Anybody who's been, checking out 21st Century Wire, check it out this weekend. There's some powerful stories on there, Israeli stories that we didn't get to, about the summary execution in Hebron. That's up there at 21st Century Wire as well. There's just a number of great articles, and there'll be more coming this week. So, this is a busy time around the world the next few weeks, and a lot of stuff is going to come to light, before the elite take their Christmas break. If they do take it this year, we don't know. So anyway, take care. And we appreciate your listenership. Thank you, ACR. Thank you, Hesher, behind the scenes, keeping it going, keeping it real, keeping it live. And thank you, our listeners and our readers at 21st Century Wire. We will see you next week. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're signing out right now. Take care.
Or have weak joints? Is it making your life hard? Sharmtec, nature's best kept secret for strong joints and a powerful immune system. Sharmtec, the product with bite. Visit us at www.sharmtec.org.
I'm Patrick Henningsen, host of The Sunday Wire, and you are tuned into AlternateCurrentRadio.com. That's me in the corner. That's me.